Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Neely Fuller Jr., did she often talk to you? Because I know she's spoken about it on the air. So did she often speak to you about the situation with the school encroaching on her her premises?
Well, just briefly, because I have talked to Dr. Wilson sparingly down through the last few years. Since 2007, really, we have kept very, very, very little contact. So I only talked to her in passing. But it appears that she was having a health problem, according to what she was telling me, because of her housing situation. Now, that's how she explained it, without going into too much detail, but she said there were some problems she was having with where her house is concerned and where it's located, et cetera, and that as a result, it was affecting her health. Now, in a broad sense, I always say, anytime in the system of white supremacy that a black person is having any kind of problem that that black person should not have, it is the fault of the white supremacists. Why do I say that? For a very logical reason. They are in charge of everything. They're not just in charge of some things. That's what white supremacy means. Now, there are some people say that there's no such thing as white supremacy. The people who say that, well, then that's their opinion and they're entitled to it. But they can't have a very lengthy conversation with me on that premise, because I have already taken the premise that the existence and all of the nine areas of activity that black people, the people of this planet, are engaged in, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, is all, not some, all dominated by what decisions people who believe in white supremacy, not all white people, but those white people who believe in something called mistreating people based on color, called white supremacy, that's what it is, they are in charge of every move that black people make on this planet. That statement is either true or false. But I say it's true. That's what white supremacy means. It's not something over on the side of the road. I hear black people sometimes say it. I ran into racism this morning. What do you mean? You were born in racism. That's the premise that I take. Now, that's either true or false. And I say it's up to people to decide themselves as individuals whether that statement is true or false. You're born in racism, and every move you make is dominated by racism if you've got color in your skin. That statement is either true or false. Now, Dr. Wilson, I believe, had the same view. So there's no point in talking about Dr. Wilson's legacy if you don't root yourself in that view, because she agreed with that when I would talk to her. So it is very, getting back to this particular thing about her death, of course, the white supremacists will have something to do, either directly or indirectly, even if it was nothing but stress, which is probably brought on what she died from, allegedly, from a stroke. She died suddenly. most of the people who contacted, who I've talked to just prior to her death, said that she seemed a picture of health and really very upbeat. But she also had said to me that she was having stress problems. Now, stress, I have been told, I don't know much about it, can sometimes cause a stroke. It's all types of stress. And if you're black and you're in the business of trying to counter racism, trying to talk about racism, trying to deal with racism, trying to get other people to deal with racism in a way that is helps to eradicate it and replace it with justice, and you kind of commit yourself to that, that sometimes can be very stressful because you can run into all kind of opposition from both white people and non-white people who, either directly or indirectly, like it the way it is and who really not are just not interested in straightening out things that should be straightening out. And so Dr. Welson was intensely interested, and that can bring about stress. And then when you have people who are countering you while you're trying to do this and making it difficult, either one way or another, financially or in your housing situation or what it is, then you can count that as part of the white supremacist conspiracy. They're the usual suspects. I've always said that.
The cows. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, January 27th, 2016. So I have been told. We will be back tomorrow, normal broadcast time, suspected racist. I'll give more information about that before we conclude the program today. The audio clip that you heard at the beginning of the broadcast, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., giving his comments on attempted counter-racist, author, psychiatrist, the late Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Definitely you can support Mr. Fuller's book, producejustice.com, producejustice.com. But very important remarks from Mr. Fuller in my regard, particularly just what he said toward the end about the impact in terms of stress with dealing honestly with racism, white supremacy, being focused on that, and how that stress can come from other victims, that stress can come from racists directly, indirectly, and just keeping in mind that Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she was not passively dealing with racism, white supremacy. This was not a hobby for her. This was not something that she just played around on the side with from time to time. This was something that she devoted decades of her life to. I mean, we're talking about a half century of her life currency devoted to aiding and helping black people as much as possible and just dealing with this conflict every day relentlessly. So I would definitely think we should keep that in mind, anyone, in terms of appreciation or thoughts about Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, and just as a model for so many different things that she did, but just modeling that consistency of being a soldier with regards to racism, white supremacy. The broadcast today, as I said, we were on the air the day that she transitioned on January 2nd. And I said that, you know, this was not going to be the last time that we talk about Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Today will not be the last time that we talk about Dr. Welsing. I know so many of our listeners, she had such a huge impact on their understanding of racism. And even so many listeners, people who've called in to talk about Dr. Welsing over the last almost month, I've talked about how they even had a big personal relationship with Dr. Welsing, where she reached out to so many people and just, you know, was so generous with her time to speak to them personally. I thought it would be grand to have one of our favorite guests on the program, who was also immensely impacted by Dr. Welsing's works, just to get some of her thoughts, reflections, things that really stood out about Dr. Welsing's work, what she'll remember, and things that she'll be trying to carry forward with the legacy of Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Joining us once again, as I said, one of Cal's all-time favorites. She is the founder of Trojan Horse Press. Produce tons of constructive counter-racist material. She has co-authored a litany of great books that I would hope listeners have heard us talk about over the years, and you should own a copy yourself, either hard copy or ebook, including Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, The Interracial Con Game, and The Beauty Con Game. Outstanding counter-racist material. You can get all of it is available. It's on Amazon. Make sure I get my reminder encouragement. If you own a book, you should write a review. They are very helpful at Amazon.com. Write a review. It does not have to be 20 pages. You can just write a quick paragraph about things that stood out about the book that you read or why you think it would be important for other black people to read the book. But very, very helpful. Write a review, Amazon.com, for any of the four books or all four of them. Shouldn't take that long. I think you can do a paragraph in 10 minutes. I don't think that's asking too much, but outstanding material. She also, in addition to those books, operates the RacismWS.com website, RacismWS.com. Also, outstanding counter-racist material, blogs, videos, just a wealth of constructive information. And she even did a post just within the last couple weeks reflecting on Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. It's titled A Tribute to Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, which has some great videos where you can hear Dr. Welsing in her own words. But always a privilege to have her on the program with us, joining us once again. Pam. Pam, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Gus. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. Glad you could share a bit of your Wednesday evening with us. Such an important topic, and I know folks definitely want to hear some of your reflections on Dr. Welsing, but just I know we have new listeners. Anybody, this might be their first time hearing from you and the work that you do. Anything that you would like folks to know about you before we get started?
Well, I would say probably the best way to know, you know, at least what I've attempted to do, and what my position is regarding the system of white supremacy is go check out my blog. I've got a lot of articles there. You know, all of it's free. I also have a lot of clips from Mr. Neely Fuller, and I have a lot of videos from Dr. Welsing. So. You know, that's pretty much explains, you know, what my philosophy is. But also, you know, I don't think people need to really focus on me anyway, because I'm still a work in progress, two steps forward, one step backwards. So I would just say, you know, if you really want to get an idea about any of my work, you know, just check out my blog. It's racismws.com. And you'll see my work, as well as the works of many, many, many people who have contributed a lot of time and energy to trying to counter the system of white supremacy.
RacismWS.com should be linked in the description to the program. We'll get right to it, see if we can cover as much as possible. You in the post that I mentioned that's at your website, in writing about Dr. Welsing, you wrote, if we truly want to honor Dr. Welsing's lifetime of work, we must pick up the mantle and continue the fight for justice. We have to stop being observers and become participants. Find something to do and some way to make a difference. Even the smallest things, like an act of courtesy or kindness, costs you nothing and reaps spiritual dividends. One way to start is by changing the way we see and treat other black people. Black females, stop mistreating other black females. Black males, stop mistreating other black males. Black males and black females, stop mistreating each other. Take the Pledge of Allegiance for black people and end the madness of anti-blackness for our children's sake. And you have that, the Black Pledge of Allegiance for Black People. And Dr. Welsing, she included this in her handout at the final Welsing Institute that she did in December of 2015. I'll read that just because I think it's appropriate, and then get your response. The pledge, I pledge allegiance to my own Black self-respect and to the respect of all other Black and shades of Black people on the planet Earth, all of whom are victims of the system of racism, white supremacy. And I pledge to use all of my life energy, intelligence, and creativity in all areas of people activity to eliminate the global system of racism, white supremacy on planet Earth, and to replace it with justice so that there can be peace. So help me God. Dr. Frances Kress Welsing. Comments on why you wrote this, because a lot of what you include in this post is what you said directly, allowing Dr. Welsing to speak for herself and including some of the things she said and video links so people can hear her directly, but just why you felt this was the thing to write, this was the thing that you wanted to get across in your tribute to Dr. Welsing.
Well, one thing is, you know, what I mentioned as far as Black people, all of us to be participants and not observers. There's entirely too much observing going on. There's entirely too little participation going on. There's entirely too little support for each other going on. And so I feel that a lot of times we're doing a lot of lip speak to the things we say we believe, but there's no real evidence of that belief. If we say we honor Dr. Welsing, how can we in the same breath do the same things consciously and continuously that she worked so hard to get us to try to see that we shouldn't do? It doesn't mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't do anything or they should be perfect or they, I'm just saying that how can we not make the effort? You know, nobody here is going to do everything that they're supposed to do. Even the things that they say they believe, they're not going to hold true to them. That's just human nature for whatever reason. And then us being prisoners within a system that is psychologically attacking us and attacking us and attacking us, and it's attacked us from the womb until the day we're put in the grave. It's understandable that there's a lot of confusion, that there's a lot of mixed feelings, that there's a lot of anti-self and anti-Blackness. My thing with people and the thing that I advise is don't worry about what the other person's doing. Start working on yourself. This is not about, because I know a lot of times I have contact with people, conversations, emails from people who say, now I'm a counter-racist, now I'm codified. And I think to myself, well, what does that really mean? You know, that's just a label. What does it really mean? Is that reflected in your everyday behavior? And to be codified kind of reminds me of when people say they're saved. I'm a Christian, now I'm saved. And a lot of times when you look at their behavior, it doesn't bear any resemblance to a Christian. So I'm saying that rather than focus on what other Black people aren't doing, and I know that's hard to do because I do it too, but the biggest focus should be on yourself. And that's what Dr. Welsing kept stressing, was self-respect, not making people respect themselves, not making people, you know, hold up to what your idea of respect is, but respecting self. That means the onus and the majority of the time and energy you should be spending, it should be on working on yourself because you can't fix anybody else. All you can do is try to be a better example and try to share information. But you can't fix anybody. And you really can't fix anybody when you can't fix yourself. So when I look at Dr. Welsing's words, it was a speech, a plea, a speech to every person as an individual. It wasn't a speech to the masses. She was talking to everybody individually, saying that we need to work on ourselves. That's what she was saying to me. And so it's very frustrating for me sometimes when I see so much participation. I do the blog. People don't comment a lot of times. Same handful of people. Now, you don't have to comment. That doesn't mean that you're obligated to comment. But it does say something to me about your ability to participate. You know, what are you engaged in? Are you just reading stuff and going away? Are you taking that information and using it? Are you buying her books and it's sitting on the shelf? Are you reading the books and not applying what she's saying? At this particular juncture in Black people's lives globally, but particularly in the U.S., it's going to be required that we do a lot more than what we're doing now. And again, I would stress to everybody, you got to start working on self. Don't become codified and counter-racist, pointing fingers at people. That's not what Dr. Wells and Mr. Fuller stood for. They didn't stand for condemning other black people. They stood for trying to give us, they sacrificed their life for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's definitely one I would hope people at least think on for a minute in terms of if there's going to be some holding accountable. I think that's one of the popular terms. We enjoy looking to hold people accountable. Get that mirror out. That is the person that you should start holding accountable in terms of what they're doing to replace white supremacy with justice. You reference Dr. Welsing throughout in Black Love is a Revolutionary Act and throughout your works. It's on the blog as well. What, I guess, in terms of like the first time that you can recall in terms of hearing of her work, I don't know if it was the ISIS papers or actual some of the material that she's written, or if it was seeing her, some of the many lectures that she's given, or even when she was on Donahue, things of that nature. Just if you can recall, like, how did you first come in contact with her material, and what were some of your initial thoughts when you kind of first bumped into some of Dr. Welsing's theories?
You know, my sister's a couple years older than me. She had a copy of the ISIS papers. And I didn't read the whole thing, but I read bits and pieces, and I thought, wow, I never even heard of counter-racism. And I don't remember her ever saying the word in the book. I don't remember. But that was really my first contact. And I always was kind of fascinated by... and then I saw her on Phil Donahue. And I don't remember if that was online or live. I don't remember when. But I think my first real contact, other than coming in contact with the book, was watching her on the Phil Donahue and just being amazed because she was so cool. I mean, she was cool. I think it was, no, it wasn't. I apologize. It wasn't Phil Donahue. It was Tony Brown's journal. And I think it was Tony Brown's journal, was it, where she was debating Dr. Shockley? You know, the so-called white scientist who had this theory of black inferiority. Was that Phil Donahue or was that Tony Brown journal? But that was my first contact with her and seeing her. And I was, to be honest, I was really impressed because the one thing she did, she was always cool, calm, and collected. She was always cool, calm, and collected. And what she said sounded so logical. And I think when she, from my understanding, when she debated Dr. Shockley, I think from what I understand, that was his last appearance, public appearance as far as television. And I was just always impressed with her because she would come out in her natural, and she would be this just smooth talking, just really cool, calm, and collected. I was just impressed with her. Those were my first contacts with Dr. Welsing, the first time I really got to, you know, see who she was.
I think that was Tony Brown's journal, where she did the debate with Dr. William Shockley, who, in addition to being a suspected race soldier, I think he did win a Nobel Prize during
right.
his stint at Stanford University down in California. What is the significance? I had someone email me about this today. What is the significance in terms of seeing her debate other white people or talk to other white people about racism, white supremacy, and her talking to other victims of racism, non-white people who didn't agree with her views or, you know, you're talking crazy, this is, you know, pseudo-scientific BS. What is the significance, or what do you take away from, as you say, her being so cool, so calm, collected, not yelling, just having so much patience, so much confidence in her views and in her presentation? What is the significance of that, at least for you?
You know, it's so hard to put into words. I just remember thinking that I wish that I could be more like her because I'm a somewhat emotional person, you know, easily irritated, sometimes spouting off. And I just remember watching her and I just thought, you know, that's, you know, when she was debating white people, I admired her courage because I know that many of us including the people today out here who call themselves race soldiers or whatever they want to call themselves, they really don't have the courage. And it takes a lot of courage to be a person in the white supremacy system and have a very high public profile, knowing that you're going to pay some price for that. So it struck me as she had courage, but she had so much dignity. And that's what I took from her. She has so much humanity. And I don't say that lightly, but she just, you could just see that she really cared about people. I mean, she was just such a, you know, she was a humanitarian. She wasn't just a person that called herself a counter-racist. It was the level of her humanity and her dignity, but also her confidence. It was like she had been raised by people that had somehow managed to undo or shield her from all of the, from, and I'm sure this isn't true, but it's like so, she had been raised in an environment that had made her so confident and shielded her from so much of the self-esteem damage that most of us have experienced, you know, which accounts for the short temper and accounts for the impatience and accounts for the uncertainty. She just really just impressed me. I mean, I can't even put it into words because I was just really impressed with the way she talked to people. You know, people would say things to her. She would never lose her cool. She would never retaliate. And I know she had the intelligence to be just as nasty, to throw a jab, to throw a punch. She never brought herself down to the level of the people that of her critics. She never did that. Never, not once that I saw. I've never saw her ever speak meanly to anyone. And I've heard people call upon cows and say some disrespectful things. And she never retaliated. And so that's what it really just stood out in me was her demeanor throughout the whole thing. And God knows what she experienced that was out of our sight. We never saw the things that she had to deal with when she lost her tenure at Howard. You know, I don't remember her ever talking about it, but she's gone through her trials and tribulations. And yet she still maintained the same personalities, the same, you know. She was really just an amazing person. And whether you agree with her theories or not, you can't take that away from her.
Context of white supremacy, it for me, and I, just to touch on briefly, her debating William Shockley, this suspected racist, Mr. Fuller as well, it's not a whole lot. There are others, but it's not a whole lot of black people that I have seen where they are willing to go out and debate, call out a white person. I've seen a whole lot of where we get very excited, victims, where we get very excited to go at other victims and set them straight, and you don't know what you're talking about, and you're just a dumb nigger, and that sort of thing. Very, very popular. It does not seem to be as popular to go at other white people and say, hey, I think that you're a racist. What you do, or what you're saying doesn't make any sense, and boom, 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 I'm going to break that down in the next 5 seconds to show that what you're saying is just craziness. That just, as you said, it in my view, it takes a lot more courage, a lot more confidence. It's a lot more dangerous in the system of white supremacy to go after that white person than to find another victim of racism and say, oh, well, I'm going to just go after them and put them in their place. They don't know what they're talking about. And that's something that, for me, had a huge impact, just seeing Dr. Welsing do that sort of thing and do it with confidence, not yelling, not screaming, as cool as you please. I'm going to just break this down so smooth so that it makes sense. You understand exactly what I mean. It's absolutely amazing display that she put in. I'm so glad that you can go online if people have not seen the debate with William Shockley. That's Tony Brown's journal. You can catch that on YouTube. When she was on Donahue, you can catch that on YouTube. So much of her content, I've said that repeatedly. She left so much material. No matter where you are on the spectrum, if you're just finding out about Dr. Welsing or if you've been following her for a number of years, she left so much material that you can go back and study. And I wouldn't care what it is when she spoke. I am absolutely certain that you can learn something, that there's some value to going back and listening to that content. But what I wanted to ask, decades, as I said, I mean, we're talking about a half century of her life at least invested in talking about white supremacy, doing it publicly, out in front of, you know, the whole world, giving her views to other white people, other non-white people. She went around the world. She went, you know, outside the states and talked in the whole nine. What is the importance, what is the value, particularly, I would say, for black females, her doing this work for a half century with natural hair?
Oh, I think it's very significant. I think it would have had a wholly different effect had she come out with blonde hair, had she worn hair like Wendy Williams. It would have made it just would have been such a contradictory message. I mean, so I think it was significant that she did not show, you know, not just was she talking the talk, but she was walking the walk. And it doesn't mean because you wear your hair natural that you're some kind of revolutionary or you got your head screwed on right. But let's be clear, where you wear your hair does say where your head is at. I mean, whether you're a white person, green person, or orange person, it does have some indication of where your head is at. That's undeniable. And I thought that it was her way of encouraging black women to be yourself, be your natural self. Look at me. I'm here the way God made me, and I'm okay with it. So I think it certainly was something that you could walk away, you could take something away from it if you chose to. Now, if you chose not to, that you chose not to. But certainly it the whole picture just fit together. Had she done something different, it would have just been a jarring contrast. So I thought it was significant that she, you know, to me, now this is just my opinion, I think the way she wore her hair was her statement also about not succumbing to white supremacy beauty standards. And that's the way I saw it.
Wow. Wow. Just a tad more on that in terms of 50 years of her, you think, making an explicit statement, because I'm thinking back and I can't recall off top her talking specifically about her own, you know, decision and why she did that and what was going on there. But I mean, it seems, at least to me, it seems pretty blatant. Like that's not difficult to process, very logical. But just if you have a tad more on that, just being a blatant statement where she is totally rejecting white supremacy beauty standards, the beauty con game, if you will. And I mean, really walking the walk, as people would say, in terms of, you talk about black self-respect and black love. Hey, black love would be, I love the natural way that the creator made me, because she talked about that all the time. Just if you could give us a bit more on that.
Well, you know, and again, I just want to make it clear. I'm not, this is not a statement knocking any black woman who wears her hair, however, you know, I mean, I don't think, I think hair makes a statement. Otherwise, why we spend so much time and energy on our hair, men or women. But I do think that Dr. Welsing was taking her own personal stand to love herself the way that she was, to do the best to respect herself the way she was. And the way God made us is the way God made us. So the fact that she wore her hair natural was also in keeping with what she was saying. And that was, there is nothing wrong with me. I am not inferior. I understand why you want to make me feel inferior and appear, because she used to talk about to give non-white people the appearance of inferiority. Well, if you embrace embrace what God gave you, you know, then you're not participating and condoning that behavior of making black people appear to be inferior. So I think that there was no other way that she could have worn her hair with her mindset. But again, you know, Dr. Welsing, like I said, I never heard her talk about her hair, and I never heard her condemn other black people, particularly black females, for their hair, because I think she understood that these behaviors that we had were just expressions of our victimization. And so that was what I'm talking about, the grace that she displayed was not to create any more damage. And I think black people have to be careful, and I need to be super careful about creating more damage through my own views of what black people ought to be doing and saying and looking like. You know, and it's a very, very, you can easily cross over into that line where you're actually creating damage when, you know, doing harm where harm shouldn't be done. But no, I couldn't see her having that message and wearing her hair any other way. I just can't even picture it.
Context of white supremacy. And I agree. In all the time she was on the program, and hearing her on other programs as well, and clips and different things, I've never heard her condemning anyone who had straightened hair, chemically mutilated hair. I never heard her doing that either, as you said, causing additional harm to people that have already been intensely victimized. I never heard that or trying to flaunt it or, you know, that sort of thing at all. Just that same patience, that same concern, that same warmth every time, even though I do think that is just monumentally important in terms of every time that you see her. It doesn't matter where you catch her in life. If you see her from the 70s, you see her from the 80s, the 2000s,
right.
Natural hair.
Right.
Every time.
But you know, one thing to keep in mind, too, she was a trained psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And so she didn't just bring words and feelings to the table. She brought years, decades of experience in her field. She had God knows how many patients. So she had a very thorough understanding of the human psychology, the black human psychology. And I think perhaps that is partly what added, you know, weight to her confidence, you know, not because she had the piece of paper from the white man, but because she had trained herself, because I'm sure she went way beyond the courses and the studies that she had to undergo to get to that level. So she came to the table like a scientist would. I've been trained in this theory, in the theory of the psychology of human beings, of black people in particular, and I've got decades of experience in the field, in the laboratory, if you want to call it the laboratory. So I think a lot of that added to the confidence. She wasn't just talking about her feelings. She was talking about something that she had worked in and had paid her dues in for decades. So perhaps that adds to the confidence. She wasn't just somebody who popped up one day after, you know, reading Mr. Fuller's book or something, saying, now I'm a codified person. She had a body of work and years of that she had put into, you know, her field. So she was really, and I know it's very easy to talk well of people after they've passed. I mean, they put on a pedestal all these flowery, you know, grand statements and all that stuff. But in all actuality, she was something else. She was a very unique, very gifted, very spiritually blessed person. She was here for a reason, and she knew what that reason was, and that says a lot.
Context of white supremacy, and just to add, I think most of the time, you go back in the archives, we were, I mean, just extremely fortunate. I feel like that's an understatement to be able to have her come in and visit with us 31 times. She was a guest on the program. But most of those 31 visits, when she came on the program, I would introduce her and say, third generation physician. Not just she popped out as a psychiatrist, but her parents, grandparents, that lineage, in terms of that confidence and just being extremely informed on this subject, man, just about the world. I mean, that's something that really impressed me, period, about Dr. Welsing. Just always, she was informed about the news. She was always, I feel like most of the time when I would call her, she would be watching the news. Like, she just continuously would be watching different news programs and getting different reports, reading the newspaper, the Washington Post, the New York Times, just going through information. It was extremely impressive in terms of just her dedication to being informed and then applying that information to her theory, her theories really on racism, white supremacy. But just in terms of her training, I can even remember talking to her, and this was within the last year, and she was saying that just going around and talking in rhyme all the time, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call it rap or hip hop, whatever, but just going around and rhyming all the time when you speak, like, that's mental illness. And I was like, I wasn't asking it like, what, you're just making up something, Dr. Wells. And I was just like, really? Like, what, can you give me some more detail about this? And she was like, I mean, and again, she wasn't talking down. It wasn't like, what are you, ignorant Gus? It was just, I mean, it's in medical journals. Like, what do you want me to do? Cite you some different reports? It's in medical journals. Like, this is, you know, this is established. Like, I'm a psychiatrist. This is documented. It's there. Like, just going around and doing this, this is a symptom of mental illness. And I would bring this up repeatedly when we talked about her, some of her views on cannabis that people did not think were very popular. You are talking to a doctor. This is not just, you know, her, this is my view or what have you, and that sort of thing, or I smoked a little bit and it wasn't for me, so this is my, like, no, you're talking to a third generation physician who has about 50 years of experience in psychiatry and working with people who have substance abuse issues and that sort of thing. I mean, it just astronomically informed, intelligent, diligent, attempted counter-racist scientist. She was, as you said, extremely unique in mm-hmm. the expertise that she
yes,
brought
she was.
To the table. What are some of the things that I guess you personally, just trying to go forward? You said in the piece that you wrote at racismws.com that, you know, each and every one of us, I mean, it is a tremendous, colossal void that, you know, just cannot be filled. But all of us, as the system of white supremacy is still here, we have to continue on trying to solve this problem that Dr. Welsing devoted her life to trying to help us correct. What are some of the things personally that you will take forward from her work?
Oh, I have to let you know, you're really breaking up badly.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's just me. Yeah, I don't... Okay.
I'll do a check. Is it still breaking up? If I'm having issues, I can try and disconnect and do again. Is it still breaking up?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Could be
okay.
Interference. Hopefully.
Maybe that'll be better.
Hopefully won't be a continued issue. I was just asking what you personally, in picking up the mantle and moving forward, what are some of the most important parts of her tremendous legacy that you personally will be applying to your work and trying to make sure that you remember and carry forward in your work?
Encouraging people to, you know, encouraging the whole thing probably as far as trying to piggyback on what she's already established is the thing about focusing on how we treat each other, focusing on how black women treat other black women, and in many respects is horrible. Focusing on how black men treat other black men, in many respects is horrible. Focusing on the way black men and women treat each other, in many respects is horrible. And I think that would be my main focus is trying to make that the focal point of any kind of effort that I would make, and that is not worrying about the Oscars, gotta stop focus, you know. I mean, I know we have to pay attention to what white people do, but we don't have to pay attention to everything they do. And I would just say focusing on the self-respect issue. That self-respect issue would stop you from complaining about the Oscars. It would stop you from begging to be included in something that has absolutely no value to the fight against white supremacy. To stop, you know, the self-respect issue would make us less easy to manipulate, less easy to get pulled into the political nonsense of first blacks and false politicians and false prophets and false preachers. All of this is a self-respect issue. Self-respect means that you stop lying to yourself. Stop pretending that there's such a thing as black people being included in this system as equals. Stop pretending that we're equal. Stop pretending that we don't have work to do. In other words, I would say my main focus would be the whole thing of what is self-respect. And self-respect is not lying to yourself. And Dr. Wilson said that over and over and over again. You know, or was it Mr. Fuller? I know they both said it, I believe. But the whole thing, I think that the focus should be on self. I wanted to just read, if you don't mind, something from the ISIS papers. It's like a paragraph.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. This is from Dr. Welsing's The ISIS Papers. Black people are afraid, but black people are going to have to learn to get over their fear. Black people do not know what is happening, but black people are going to have to learn and understand what is happening. Black people are not thinking, but black people are going to have to begin thinking. Black people are not being quiet, but black people are going to have to learn to start getting quiet so they can think. Black people are not analyzing and planning, but black people are going to have to learn, have to begin analyzing and planning. Black people do not understand deep self-respect, but black people are going to have to learn the meaning and practice of deep self-respect. Black people are going to have to stop permitting black children to play with parenthood. Black people are going to have to stop moaning, rocking, crying, and complaining, begging. Black people are going to have to stop thinking that rhyme and rhetoric will solve problems. Black people are going to have to stop finger-popping and singing. Black people are going to have to stop dancing and clowning. Black people are going to have to stop laughing and listening to loud radios. All of these behaviors and many more have absolutely nothing to do with addressing the challenges and conditions of the open warfare continuously being waged against the black collective. So I would say that would be the focus, is not on changing white people. You're not going to change white people. This thing about protesting and shaming white people and boycotting Oscars and all that is still a cry for attention, and it's still a cry for them to fix whatever is wrong. That is a huge mistake. They're not going to fix what they broke. They're not going to fix me. They're not going to fix you. They can't even fix themselves. So this thing of looking to white people for solutions, discussing solutions with them, is a waste of time. The first person you have to convince is self. The first person whose respect you should be concerned with is your self-respect. Mr. Fuller talked about that too, about you can't demand respect from anybody. The only thing you can do is respect yourself. Nobody owes you respect, and I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot in our community, among black people. Oh, you gonna respect me? Well, no, you can't make me respect you. What you can do is respect yourself. Now, that's something that you can do that I can't control, but you can't control me. So this whole thing of focusing on self, fixing self, taking control of your children, and showing them by example what it means to be a self-respecting black person. I'm sorry, it doesn't mean sitting in front of Empire and with your children and watching that madness. Now, you know, people watch what they watch and they do what they do. But again, we're going to have to make a decision. Either we're going to survive in this environment and at least make some inroads, if not overturn the whole system that is in place, or we're going to just have to get used to greater mistreatment. It's not going to stay the same. It's not going to lessen up. It's not going to fix itself. You know, and so my focus is really on black people, not on white people. You know, I'm not wasting no time trying to get white people to change. So I would say that's the thing that I focus on, is what do black people need to do? Because it makes no sense to go to somebody to take out a bullet when they shot you with the gun.
Are jeopardizing being invited back if you're going to continue with your empire bashing, I think.
No, I knew that was a touchy subject.
Right on. For folks who, if you have comments you would like to ask Pam on the subject matter, feel free. You can dial in. The number is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you have a question. We're doing 2 hours today, 2 hours, so you should get your hand up right now. Don't lollygag if you have a question that you want to make sure that you get in. What would your response be? Because almost, I mean, literally, the moment after Dr. Welsing had transitioned, people started to come in and comment about her work, and you had people saying, oh, my God, this is she was just as nutty as can be, and pseudoscientific BS, and, you know, she passed away. But, I mean, her theories were just as crazy as a bed bug, and you don't want to waste any time reading the ISIS papers or anything associated with it. People were talking about how to deal with that moving forward. What would Dr. Welsing want us to do? What are your thoughts on that?
I think you have to look at it as warfare. We don't even know who these people are half the time that were making these statements. And say that they were some black people, and I'm sure they were. People say what they say. And that's it. I mean, you know, the cowards come out of the woodwork. If they were so certain of what they were saying, why didn't I say it when she was alive? So the fact that you wait until Dr. Welting has passed to, you know, to throw your cans and bottles and rocks, well, that says a lot more about you than it does about her. So I would say don't even be upset by it, because that's to be expected. That's to be expected. You know, whether they're black, white, or what would you call them, agents, provocateurs, or whatever. You got to understand, a lot of stuff you see online is agent provocateurs. That's all it is. And, again, I look at people that wait until somebody's, like, it's like waiting until somebody's out the room and you start selling wolf tickets. I mean, if you really believe what you're saying and you have the integrity and courage to say it, why didn't you say it when the person was in the room? So at that point, you have no credibility. So I would say don't get caught up in people with no credibility. Don't get caught up with entertainers. They have no credibility. They're paid. They're people who are paid to say things. I'll give you an example, and not to be ragging on a black person, but some black people, actors, actresses, came out talking about the Oscars. I looked at it, well, to me the whole thing is suspicious, because first of all, if you're in that system and you're being paid by that system, you're working for that system. So any, you know, so I just look at people that come out and in certain time periods where they were silent before, and now all of a sudden they're talking. I just dismiss them. I don't pay any attention to them. You know, words are just words. You know, they can't destroy her legacy. And we know that. So I would say, you know, reserve your energy. Conserve your energy for something more important than some people coming out the woodwork after she's passed and after she's left the room to say what they say. Just words.
Absolutely. I know Mr. Fuller, he was pretty much in the same vein of emphasizing that, you know, Dr. Welting was here for a long time talking about racism, white supremacy, and she was not exactly bashful. I think we've used a lot of different adjectives to describe her. Bashful is not one. She went all over the world, radio programs constantly. Talking about white supremacy, I think, and her number was listed, by the way. It's not like even her number was a private thing or what have you. I think anybody, if you didn't agree with something that, you know, some of her theories or what have you, or if you had a question, you feel like, you know, something that she expounded just wasn't explained clearly or didn't make sense, you should have had ample opportunity to address that with her directly, to ask any questions or to present your view or whatever the case may be. Ample opportunity. And if you got to wait until now, as you said, that to me, you have lost a lot of credibility. And as you said, this, a lot of this could be orchestrated. I would suspect probably is orchestrated by a racist woman, racist man, racist child, to just cause further confusion, dissension. That's one of the things that they love to do. And I would say it's a long record of racists doing this sort of thing, waiting until, particularly if it's a black person and they spend a lot of time talking about racism and trying to solve this problem. Oh, man. It's really time to go to work once they die. Now we can distort what they were talking. And I wouldn't be surprised if anything, if they come out and, oh, man, Dr. Welting had a secret white lover. And, you know, oh, man, she hated Mr. Fuller. And we found a secret letter where she called him a coon. Anything.
Right.
They
wait
to do that sort of thing. All of that, I would chalk. It's not worth a hill of beans. She was here. I think she was very clear, very consistent in what she had to say about racism, white supremacy, and again, anybody. And they did a lot of this while she was still here in terms of individual pseudoscientific BS. It was a lot of that while she was here. I think you can look at the way she responded to that while she was still alive. I never heard her call people names, even Timothy Wise. I didn't hear her curse and stomp up and down and call him names and yell or anything like that. This is my view. This is what I think. Next question. Same dignity, same grace. And she even addressed it specifically because someone brought up, it was a prominent black person had, you know, discredited her theory or, you know, gave their view saying Dr. Welting didn't know what she was talking about. And she just said, okay, that's their view. racism is still here. The problem is still white people. Moving forward. And she even dedicated some time to saying, you know, we cannot afford to get caught into that sort of squabbling and bickering with other victims of racism about, you know, who has the best view on how to solve this problem. The problem is still here. We all got a lot of work to do, and us fighting amongst each other is not going to contribute to solving that problem. I think that's exact. If anything, I can just repeat a lot of what you've been really echoing throughout the program this evening. If anything, any non-white person that is engaged in this behavior, I think the best thing that we can do is display maximum Black self-respect and how we go about handling that situation. If anything needs to be said at all, say it with maximum Black self-respect. Keep it as efficient as possible, and make sure you do not forget what the source of the problem is. It is still white people. Before I
nag, Dr. Fuller says, he said, Mr. Fuller, blah, blah, you know, people ask him a question. He said what he said. You know, so if somebody says something, they just said what they said. You don't have to explain it. You don't have to address it. They said whatever they said.
Brilliant, brilliant. I agree completely. You and Dr. Welsing share a connection, a pretty intimate connection with the city of Chicago, Illinois. The last time we had you on the program, we spent pretty much the whole time talking about just all of the myriad of different issues and things that are going on in Chicago. There's been so much that has happened in that time. The shooting that I guess a lot of people focused on, Quintonio LeGreer and Betty Jones, that was in December. The big to-do with the public school system, where they're having a big budget shortfall, and the teachers are even talking about going on strike. All the calls to get Rahm Emanuel to resign. I think they even did reparations for some of the victims of John Burge and the police terrorism that was going on in the city of Chicago. Just anything that you'd like to get in about what's been happening in the Windy City over the past 30 days?
Well, I know recently Governor Romner of Illinois, you know, he's the governor of Illinois. He's allegedly trying to get some legislation through, or proposing some legislation that will allow the state of Illinois to take over the Chicago public school system and the city of Chicago. And basically, what I think is happening is both the Illinois and Chicago are trying to get away from fulfilling their pension obligations, because the money is stolen, it's gone. And so this legislation will make it possible to accomplish a couple things, probably a whole lot of things I don't know about, but two things in particular. It would allow the city of Chicago to file bankruptcy, and it would allow pretty much the dissolution of the Chicago Teachers Union. So I've been telling people that I know that you got to leave this Democrat-Republican crap alone. It doesn't. It's a subterfuge. It's a farce. We've got a Democratic mayor and a Republican governor in bed together, and I'm sure that goes on across the board all over the country. And so, you know, that stood out to me recently, and I just said, you know, I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know if we're going to do it, but leaving our children in the hands of these big city school systems is educational genocide. I'm not expecting Black parents in mass to pull their children out. I know it's not practical for a lot of people, but we need to stop being surprised when they attack the education of Black children. We need to stop expecting the supremacy system to treat our children correctly. And we definitely need to stop putting our children in schools and situations where they're a minority. Now, people might say, well, they get a better education. Yeah, but they get a different education, one that's going to carry on through their entire life. It's going to be more significant than not getting a good math score or getting a good test score. The education they're going to get in that environment is that they're inferior, and that the best way to deal with that inferiority is to be validated by white people. So we got to take our education. I mean, you know, it's not impossible. It would be difficult, and they would try to oppose it. But we need to really be looking toward an independent school system. I don't say that's going to happen, because, again, we're more observers than participants. But the thing that I ask people to do is keep it real. Stop lying to yourself. Stop lying and expecting something that is not going to happen. Stop expecting the white supremacy system to educate our children the way they would educate white children. And stop pretending to be surprised when our children are mistreated. I don't know what we are going to do, if anything, about it. But again, it's about self-respect. If you're not going to do anything, be honest about it. If you're not going to participate, be honest about it. But don't walk around surprised that the same thing and worse continues to happen. So Chicago, I believe, because of its large black population, like most places that have a significant black population, are going to be on the increasing attack with our children, with incarceration, with economics, with education, with job losses. So at some point, we just got to take this seriously. We got to start taking. I just don't have any. But that's what's happening here. It's things that more robberies, more poverty, more crime. That's pretty much what's happening here. And again, a lot of the killing is suspect. A lot of the shootings are suspect. But again, this is war. And until we take it seriously and get our heads out this TV set where it shows a whole different non-reality, we got to take it seriously. This is war. And it's going to continue to be war. And we got to... Well, that's what's going on in Chicago. It's progressively more and more problems. A lot of gentrification, still the continued march of gentrification. Black people being moved out of areas. It just continues, and it's not going to stop. And the abysmal lack of black businesses, it's really quite distressing. And if you live in the inner city, it's a very much of a pressure cooker environment to live in. It's making a lot of people mentally ill. It's making a lot of people spiritually ill. It's making a lot of people physically ill. So Chicago is not, if anybody's thinking about relocating to Chicago, my advice is don't do it. I'll just end on that note.
Wow. Wow. Context of white supremacy. I think even that is part of the racist design to see if they can kick more black people out of the city of mm-hmm. Chicago, because I think the numbers had been falling for the last few years. I think that's been one of the more recent trends in terms of the population of black people in Chicago overall decreasing, even though it is still a huge number of black people in the greater Chicago area. I know when we spoke, and I think we did a whole program talking about just the public school system specifically, because they had the big strike in 2012. And I mean, it's a lot of black people, a lot of black females, and just a lot of black people, period, who are a part of the Chicago public school system. But they had the strike in 2012. We did the program talking about that. And I saw that I think her name is Barbara Bird Bennett. She used to be, quote unquote, in charge of the Chicago public school system. And then they banged her up and got a conviction that she had been doing some extortion and stealing funds and all this other stuff. And then I think I saw this week where they were trying to get back pay. And the scheme was where white people had the rules set up that they can get like triple the amount if there's any sort of malfeasance where you get in trouble. And then they say, oh, you stole this, you did this wrong. They can get like triple whatever your salary was. And some of it was they can get triple of what your salary was, even if you didn't get that compensation. So this is money that you may have never even gotten. They can go and take back like triple that amount and triple the amount of like her salary and these other benefits, some of which she never even got. It amounted to like $10 million that they're trying to take from her. In addition to the conviction, where she's looking at, a sentence that's going to be coming up at some point soon. And I just saw that. I shook my head. Number one, I think you were saying about being honest. If we're in a system of white supremacy, no non-white person is in charge. That's number one. Two, I would just say that would be another lesson. You could add Jesse Jackson Jr. To that list as well. That any of these non-white people, if you think, they're a politician or you're quote unquote in charge of the school system or whatever it happens to be, even all the way up to the White House, they're a sellout, they're an Uncle Tom, and you're not doing right by black people. And look, you got this big cushy job, and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't even worry about it because the evidence has shown white people will probably take care of them too. If you wait long enough, they are still non-white. They're still victims of racism. White people will probably remind all of us of their status. If you just wait long enough, that tends to be the pattern of what happens. I was going to hit the phone line. Anything else you wanted to hit before I hit the phone?
I was just saying, the system of white supremacy, white supremacy has got ahead of fun too. And that's the fun part, is to use her, like they used her. And, okay, say she was a willing participant. She did what she did. But at the end of the day, she's going to be the subject to selective punishment. And so I don't know what these black officials are thinking when they go into these situations. And it probably they set her up with those schemes. They probably had somebody contact her to set her up. Not that she was honest, because obviously she wasn't. But the thing is that they're just waiting until you've outlived your purpose, and then they selectively pick and target who they're going to have fun with. It's like a cat chasing a mouse around, batting it around until it finally eats it. So we should not be surprised, and nor should we be impressed with these titles. Leave the titles alone. The titles don't mean anything. From the President of the United States on down, the titles mean nothing. When a black person has a title in the system of white supremacy, the title means nothing. It is just a title. It does not make them white. It does not make them less non-white. And so I would love to see the day where we are no longer impressed by first black anything. And I tell people all the time, whenever a black person gets an award, a title of any note, look for black people to be harmed. Either you're going to be harmed or deceived. It's one or the other. It's either an act of deception or it's signaling some harm will be taking place. And probably and possibly both things at one time. So the day where I see where black people are not moved by these titles and not moved by these awards and all this other subterfuge of so-called inclusion, that would be a happy day for me. I would be ready to just lay on the couch forever. If that day ever comes, will we start to see through the hype?
Amen. Context of white supremacy. And just added context, again, this is Barbara Bird Bennett, black female who was quote-unquote in charge of the public school system, could be racial showcasing where the school system is failing and, you know, it's this black person's fault. She messed everything up. That's one way that the racists win. But just also think it's important to keep in mind they just gave quote-unquote reparations to these black victims. This massive torture that was going on with the Chicago Police Department, where this just went on unchecked for decades, probably is still going on, it seems, just abusing and doing all these things to black people. Even the Welsing moment, they were putting electrical shocks on black males' testicles while John Burge was in charge of the Chicago Police Department. John Burge, he got convicted just for lying. No conviction for any of the torture of black people, just for lying. And he's out of jail now. Out of jail, chilling, doing his thing, no problem. Think he even still got his pension. I had a double check
on
that.
Yes, he did.
Still got his pension. Thank you.
Still got his pension. That's right.
Thank you.
That's right.
Still got his pension, chilling. Rahm Emanuel, all of this malfeasance. They're saying, man, maybe he lied to us about this shooting and what's going on. Why hasn't he done anything? We got all this debt in the city of Chicago. As you said, we might be looking at bankruptcy. He's been mayor elected 2 terms. Nothing happened to him. Chilling. Serve out his term. You all voted me in twice. Hey, what can you do? And they can say, hey, black people voted for him. Nothing happened to him. Jesse Jackson Jr., still in jail now. Barbara Bird.
Right. Campaign contributions. Not stealing money from the public. I don't even know what they're supposed to be able to do with these campaigns. I mean, I just assume if people contribute to a campaign, I don't know what's supposed to happen to the money. So whatever happens to the money, I don't really care. Because they didn't get a dime of my money. And if they didn't get any public money, I don't really care. So, I mean, he stole, what, less than $1 million?
Significantly
allegedly.
Less. Significantly
yeah.
less.
And people right here in my state stealing billions of dollars. At least hundreds, at least millions of dollars. So, you know, I'm just saying we should reach a point where we're not surprised. You can be angry or whatever you feel, but this whole thing of thinking that some kind of way we're waiting for white people to fix it, waiting to shame them and to be, that needs to stop. That just needs to stop. That needs to stop. This pretense Because I really truly believe we understand more than we let on. I don't think we necessarily understand it in the terms of being able to articulate it, but I think we know intuitively and instinctively that there's something wrong and rotten going on, and it's not going to fix itself. I think we know that. Because we've had too many wake-up calls to say nothing's really changed but the surface. So, you know, at the very least, we need to stop acting surprised and expecting them to change. That, those two things we need to stop doing. Stop acting surprised that racism is still what it is, and stop expecting white people to change. If you do those two things, you might get a little clarity. Get out of that denial. I mean, it's just it doesn't help, and it doesn't work.
Amen. Right on. Just accurate. I say that consistently. Strive for accuracy. Strive for accuracy. Jesse Jackson Jr., he just finished his prison term at the end of last year. Finished his term, so he is no longer in prison. The folks that dialed in, let's see. Thomas in New York, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us, Thomas in New York.
Good evening to all. Good evening, Gus. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening.
I was listening to you. I so agree with you, and I wish that as well that black people will stop looking for this white validation all the time and stop running for these positions, stop trying to be in a position where they're administrating white supremacy. I just think that would do a huge justice to us all. Had a couple questions for you. One was, I noticed two viruses have been popping up on the news, at least here in New York. A few months ago, they was talking about Legionnaires and how it was coming from these they're coming from the towers by the projects that cool the water, and there's a lot of cases in usually public housing areas in Brooklyn and the Bronx. And now they had this new one, Zika, which is an African mosquito, but somehow it got to South America, and now it's coming up everywhere. I just wanted to know, have you guys been having the same stuff in your news in Chicago, or is that just a New York thing here?
You know, I haven't heard about anything about Chicago, but I just recently heard about this virus from this fly or whatever it is from Africa. I just heard about that like about 2 or 3 days ago. And so, again, the usual suspects. I mean, you have animal insect species that have been in Africa for God knows how many thousands of years, and now all of a sudden, viruses that I forget what they say this virus does, but it's pretty devastating, and no cure.
It does something to the baby of a pregnant woman, where they get the baby's grown with a small head and a big body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I would say the usual suspects. It's just genocide. That's all it is. It's an attempt to destroy and control who's going to be on the planet, destroy populations, and just, you know, it's just warfare. It's biological warfare, in my opinion. I'm not buying that all of a sudden some fly or mosquito or monkey or ant or fish is coming from another area and gives people some virus that is so allegedly unknown prior to that time. I'm just not buying it. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think that's the way nature works. So I always, when I hear stuff like that, I think, well, they're on their job. They're doing what they set out to do, and that's to wipe out large numbers of the particularly non-white population. And if they tell you, some people get confused because they'll say, well, white people are dying too. Yeah, well, white people have to die because you got to have, you know, I mean, they don't care about white people really either. They just need them as foot soldiers. So, you're going to have collateral damage, but keep your eye on the actors. The people are actually benefiting in their own sick way from what's going on. And that, to me, will point to the purpose and the identity of who's doing what.
Absolutely, I agree.
It's a shame.
And my last question for you was, do you think that any black person in an Area 8 relationship could effectively be a counter-racist? And I'll mute my line with your answer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for calling. You know, I read a post from a lady. She didn't post it to me. She posted on someone else's blog. And my answer to that is no. I don't think you can. I think it's just been a statement that I've posted in my book, and that was you can't lay down with white supremacy at night and get up in the morning and fight it. I have yet to meet a single, now I'm not saying they don't exist, but I have personally yet to meet a black person in a sexual relationship with a white person who does not become more confused, does not become more anti-black and more anti-self. I think that it's a totally contradictory dynamic. Oh, yes, you can be attracted to whoever. You can, quote-unquote, fall in love with whoever. But if you're in a war and people are waging war on you and you choose to align yourself with the people who are benefiting from that war against you, whether they're active participants or passive participants, then you're not fighting a war at all. You have waved the white flag of surrender. So, no, I don't think. I think there's a lot of delusions about being able to do it, but from what I have seen, I've heard people talk the game, talk the words, and then turn around and go home with a white person. Well, to me, that's maximum confusion for themselves and for anybody in that psychological contaminated area. So I would say for me, no. I would say absolutely not. I think it's a totally contradictory position. And if you understood the damage that being sexually involved with the same people who benefit from your oppression, because that's basically what you're doing. And it doesn't have to mean that person's a terrible person, but that person is benefiting from white supremacy at your expense. And the one thing I've noticed, the other thing I've noticed in every single interracial relationship that I've observed personally, I can't speak for the ones I haven't observed, is that white person never sits down with that black person and tells them what white people do when no black people are around. They never level and tell the truth to their spouses, to their children. And to me, that's the number one big point that should be thought of. If you're with a white person and they haven't sat down and told you how to protect yourself from other white people, then how can they say they love you? If they keep secrets about how white supremacy is practiced and how racism is practiced, because they know how it's practiced and they know how it harms you, and if they do not tell the person they so-called love, if they do not tell these children that they've helped bring into the world, what more do you need to know about where they stand? Where's their real loyalty? And I have not met anybody who has ever said, or at least known to my knowledge, has ever really come clean. Dr. Welsing talked about that. This is a perfect time to bring that up. She said that in all the years that she had been lecturing and this and that, she has asked this question. She's never gotten a real answer. What do white people talk about with no black people in the room? No white person has ever answered that question. She said was the only person that came close to it was a white female. I think she was at a lecture. She may have been a professor. She was somebody professional. And she said, Dr. Wilson, you're absolutely right. White people talk about black people all the time when there are no black people around, and most of it is negative. And it's assumed that everybody present agrees with what is being said. When Dr. Welsing asked her to tell what was said, she wouldn't do it. A young lady had called me about a year ago. She is a product of a black male, white female union. She said that in her house, whenever her mother was white, whenever something about racism came on the television, her mother would change the channel or she would leave the room. And one time she was trying to have a conversation with her father about something to do with race, and the mother came over and sat in his lap and started making out. And she said she knew her mother was trying to stop her father, who was a very confused person, who basically wasn't comfortable talking about racism, trying to keep him. Now think about that dynamic. Here it is. He's a black man who is being victimized by racism all the time with a white woman who does not want him to think about it, doesn't want her children to think about it. If a person asks, if I could give that person that explanation as far as why it's not a good idea to be in a sexual relationship with a white person, that should be crystal clear to them, in my opinion, why it's not a good idea. Why would you want to be with someone, or friends with someone, who does not care if you're mistreated, who does not tell you everything that they could tell you to keep you from being mistreated? Why would you want to be with a person? If I see you crossing the street, and I see a truck coming, and I know you don't see it, and I don't tell you, why would you want to be with me? That's my answer to that question.
Right on. The person that dialed, black female caller in New York, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us. Black female caller in New York, did you have a question for Pam?
Hi. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good evening, Gus. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening.
Good to hear you on the program.
Thank you.
I didn't really have a question, Gus. I just wanted to just make an observation based on what Pam was talking about. I just wanted to concur with you with regard to Dr. Wellman's kindness, her calmness, her patience, her concern, her warmth, and her confidence. And I just wanted to know if, you know, you agree with me about this. I went to Dr. Wellman's lecture in D.C. for the past 3 years, in December of 2013, 2014, and I was at her last lecture at Howard in December of 2015. And as black women, as a black woman, she was, you know, not only physically beautiful to me, but her confidence in everything and her radiance was something that attracted me, and her mind as well, her ability to see this thing logically with facts, not with things that were something that she made up. So her theory, she just said, okay, this makes perfect sense, so I'll just say this. As Gus said, she was a doctor. She was a psychiatrist. She gave us facts. So as black women, in my opinion, and, you know, I just wanted to know if I was on track with this, I don't think that we know enough other black women with these personality traits, and you touched on that. And I think that that speaks to our victimization as black women. We don't know enough other black women. And what it is that everything that Dr. Wellman talked about, everything, her theory, her breakdown of ball games, her breakdown of how we live our lives. And incidentally, she did mention hair, but not in the context that you and Gus were discussing earlier. To make black people's hair longer, because I guess she made that observation that, you know, and it was a testament to her own beauty. But what I saw was that what she spoke about was what a lot of black women, I believe, think, but we don't have the tools to unpack it and make it logical and put it into words. I just wanted to know if I was on track with that. And another thing, I'm in my house and I'm doing some work, so I'm kind of listening to my a lot of my favorite counter-racists on YouTube. I'm listening to Dr. Khalid Muhammad. I'm listening to Steve Coakley and Phil Valentine, Layla Africa. And one thing they all did was mention her. And I thought it was, you know, I said, wow, everybody's in agreement with her. Why? Because she never wavered from her theories. She never wavered from what she taught. And the fact that all of these years, and I'm watching people who have passed on, I'm watching some of these people who are in the ancestral realm right about now, and it speaks to our victimization as well. And like she said, it all boils down to we don't qualify for mental health in the system, because the system is untruthful to us, and so we have a problem with grasping this truth and even living it for ourselves. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to make that comment, and I wanted to know if I was on point with that. I'll mute my line.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. I think there's just so much work to be done, and I agree with what you said about Dr. Wellstein and her dignity and black women. We're not having the tools by which to make ourselves better. you know, to make us feel, but I'm talking about physically either. You know, we exist in a system that despises women and blackness. And so it's a very, very tricky road to travel. And it makes it difficult for our male children and our female children when the mothers are suffering from low self-esteem and the fathers as well. You know, I think that, I agree with what you're saying. She was just an amazing person. And I don't say that in the sense like paying tribute to someone just because they passed on, but it's just a fact. And I would have said it if she was here. She was just an amazing person. And if I could have, and I'm not saying this facetiously or being phony, if I had one-fifth of the grace and dignity that she had, I could probably do great things. But, you know, I struggle with my emotions in this system, and I struggle with my emotions dealing with black people in this system. So perhaps you're listening to some really powerful information, and so I congratulate you on that you're at least exposing yourself to the thinking of many great black people. Thank you for calling them.
I'm sorry, Gus. Oh, thank you, Pam. One more thing. If anybody gets a chance to watch that Donahue interview that she did, there's a point in the interview where everything goes crazy. People are screaming. Bill Donahue, and he says, okay, everybody calm down, so. And Dr. Wilson, so calmly, she says, I'm a psychiatrist. Like, what? I'm not getting excited. Every time I watch it, I laugh because she is the only calm one in the room. And that's all I had to say. I'll be fine.
Yeah, she was something.
Absolutely. The person that dialed in 4300, last four digits 4300. Did you have a question for Dr. Welsing? I mean, question for Pam. Question for Pam. Sorry.
Woo! I think that's a compliment. Thank you.
For sure.
Hi. Good evening. Can I be heard?
Good evening.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, Pam, I always enjoy hearing you. Today, ironically, I just completed Black Love is a Revolutionary Act.
And
what can I say? Excellent work. I actually reviewed the book when I bought it. I purchased it in 2014. And so I'm actually just reading it now. So I definitely definitely made a review, and it was really interesting. I'm in New York City. And riding the train, reading that book, and having white people sit next to you, and you know how nosy and curious they are. And so it's interesting to kind of see them kind of squirm, and it's very, very interesting. I'm sitting there reading the book calmly, and they're just kind of like squirming. It's very interesting. Two things. One is, I was wondering if there's a book in the works on Dr. Welsing's life.
I wouldn't be surprised though, but I haven't heard of anyone. I haven't heard anything about that.
An interesting project for someone to work on. Interviewing, interviewing everything. And second, if you go on to Amazon, if you have a Kindle, the Kindle version of the ISIS papers is currently no longer available.
Oh, no.
And
in a tribute.
They had seven reviews, and only seven reviews on the book, and five of the seven basically said, it was horrible. Not that the content of the book was horrible, but there were a lot of typographical and grammatical errors.
Oh, you know what? There were. I'm not sure who compiled the book, but they did the. You know, it was quite honestly, it was a bad job, and that may be why it's not on there. Because Amazon, I have books, Kindles, e-books on Amazon, and they sent me an email not too long ago saying that, you know, they had caught some. some errors in my book. So they may have decided to pull it because it, you know, because it wasn't, you know, up to the standards. Because I got an email. They weren't going to pull my books, but they, you know, asked me to correct a couple of errors. They were mostly like a misspelled word or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but I think that if people go on to Amazon and they look for Dr. Walton's books, I hope I would encourage everyone to actually read the reviews because, you know, sometimes when you see just the actual star ratings, a lot of times people will get deterred by it. They would assume that it's related to the content of the book. So I'm just putting that. I actually have a copy that I had purchased some time back, but I have it packed away somewhere, so I really wanted to get the book on Amazon on my Kindle so I could read it. But Pam, I always truly enjoy you coming on the show, and thank you very much. And I
have
other books.
Great, thank you so much, and also thank you for letting me know about the Dr. Welshing. I'm going to and I would say to everybody, leave a review. See, this is the thing about participating. Leave a review.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very, very small thing to do is to, you know, leave reviews. So we definitely owe that much to her. And I leave reviews. I just don't use, my name just doesn't come up. So I may have a review out there. People say, well, but she always tell me I leave a review. Where's her review? Well, I got reviews out there. It's just that my real name doesn't come up in the review. That's all. So you wouldn't know that that was me. But I'm going to double check and make sure that my review on ISIS is there, on ISIS papers is there. And I hope everybody else goes and leaves a, and hopefully that ebook will come back. You know, perhaps when we did it, we'll go ahead and redo it.
Right on. Appreciate that. First three callers all in New York. Right on. Person that dialed in, firefighter in Florida. Do you have a question for Pam? You should be with us.
Greetings, everyone.
Greetings,
Miss Pam.
Hi, greetings.
Yes, I really didn't have a question prepared, but the first thing comes to my mind about the program today. In my opinion, if Dr. Welshing, I think Dr. Welshing would really approve of all of your books based on from studying Dr. Welshing myself for years and reading the ICE papers over and over and over again, going back to it for references. Your books go right in line of what I think that she had to say as far as a critical means of how non-white black males and females should cooperate with one another. I think she would very much approve of those books, if that means anything to you.
Yes, it does.
When I think of Dr. Francois Welshing, the first word come to my mind is dedication.
Mm-hmm.
It just boom, comes out there like an atomic bomb. And it goes back, I think, even before she came in contact with Mr. Fuller, because as Gus mentions all the time when he introduces her, third-generation physician, she came up in a household that had a high level of achievement and dedication to the community. I've heard her say that she was instructed to whatever profession you get, the idea in mind is to come back to the community. And the community, and this perspective, this context, is talking about whenever and wherever non-white black people are at. And she certainly understood that and did that constantly. As far as dedication, also what comes to my mind is they force, they mean the system of racism and supremacy. They force students who want to be physicians to deal with the thinking process of people. I think it's called a psychiatrist. they make them go through a Freudian field of study. But, I mean, that doesn't even work for white people, let alone talking about anybody else. It's a failure in itself, because if his field of studying the mind was so good, then he would have been able to predict it. He would have been able to predict, as she said, Dr. Wells has said, the Holocaust. And he was not able to. He barely got out of there with his hat and coat before he was killed. But I said that to say that what she has done for me is, as a physician, her way of studying the mind needs to be institutionalized. I hope I'm being clear on what I'm stating about this lady and how important she should be to us as far as thinking is concerned, the mental health is concerned. She's an institution in my mind to itself. Last but not least, two more things along with it. When you met her, the gracefulness, how graceful she was. I mean, I'm listening to the program, and it's already been stated about how calm she was. That's an example that we all should take up after, especially when we're communicating with each other. I can tell from an emotional standpoint when she was really, you know, about to get into it, you know, with someone. But at the same time, it wasn't. She didn't turn the volume up. But you can see on the different tempo of her language went, and it was obvious to me. But it was graceful, which is a very powerful thing for me. And as far as femininity is concerned, she certainly was an example. And I don't say that word from a standpoint of weakness. I mean from a standpoint of being something very powerful. As far as that concern, because there is a something constructive of males and females being different, and from that standpoint, I use the word femininity, and man, she exemplified it. She exemplified it in my mind, and so if you care to, based on those things that I said, you know, maybe you can make some comments on it also. Thank you. I'll listen.
Okay, well, thank you for calling. Yeah, I agree that she was phenomenal. As far as liking my books, the books wouldn't even exist if it had not been for Dr. Wellesley and Mr. Fuller. There wouldn't have been any books. When I started really listening to Mr. Fuller, and then started reading and listening to, and let me say this, Gus, had Gus not created this program and created a format that allowed us to get a constant flow of information and inspiration from Dr. Wellesley and Mr. Fuller, I don't think the other books would have been done. I think the first book definitely wouldn't have been done without Mr. Fuller and Dr. Wellesley. They just wouldn't have been done. It blew my mind when I started listening, really started listening. It blew my mind. I was actually working on something else. I was working on a novel. And I put it down and started doing the first book, Trojan Horse. And once I was made aware of cows, and I came on the program with that first book, the guests that Gus brought on, they led to the other books. None of these four books would have been done had I not been in that dynamic. So the books exist because they existed. You know, I had never thought about racism in the way that Mr. Fuller brought it to me. And I never would have understood what some of the things that lay behind the practice of white supremacy had it not been for Dr. Wellesley. So I owe them a great debt in terms of reducing my confusion, and it's changed who I am. I'm still confused, but I'm not as confused. I still lack you know, still working on self-esteem and self-respect, but I have more of it. And I think the biggest thing that has helped me has been embracing what I know to be true. And I would say to people, yes, truth is painful, but truth will make you strong. Lies make you weak. Lies make you crazy. Lies will make you more mentally ill. I encourage all to embrace truth. Embrace truth. And once you start doing that, you start keeping that war hat on, you'll start understanding things you never understood before. But I owe a huge debt of gratitude to the exposure I had. And, I mean, yeah, it's just a debt that can't be repaid. But that's okay because they never asked to be repaid for it. I would just say that we should continue on if we truly honor her and honor all of the brave people, some of who have lost their lives in this battle, then we need to work on ourselves and work on our behavior and work on that anti-blackness. That anti-blackness is something. Man, it's everywhere, and it's the programming is so intense to keep you trapped in that mindset. And interracial sex is one of those main things being used to keep us trapped in that self-hating anti-black mindset. So, well, thank you for calling, though, but yes, the books wouldn't even exist without her and Mr. Fuller. They just wouldn't have never even come about.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. For sure, for sure. The person that dialed in, I think this is Roz. Did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us.
Yes. Greetings to you. Excuse me. Greetings to you, Gus, and greetings to you, Pam. It's really an honor to talk to you today. Actually, you know me as Kalile, but I wanted to say thank you for your work. But I have a couple of questions. The first one was, I've been listening to the Dr. Welsing episodes of The Cows in Succession, and I came across a couple of episodes. I'm now at episode 22, where she had mentioned an ISIS papers too. And I wanted to know if there was any information on whether she was able to finish that book or if it will ever be available for the public. That's my first question.
Wow, that's a good question. I didn't, you know, I don't know if I heard anything, like maybe when she was on the program, but to my knowledge, you know, Gus might be able to give more clarity on that. I never heard that there was a ISIS II that had actually been completed. I'm not even sure there was one in the works. Do you know, Gus?
I know she had talked a few times about, you know, working on that, and that was something that she was in the process of doing. As the caller said, I think she had mentioned it on the program a few times over the years. I'm not sure if she got it completed. I don't know, you know, if her family and going through her estate and kind of going through her work and what have you to see, you know, if it's something that, you know, they can publish posthumously. I know mm-hmm. that, you know, certainly would be much appreciated for a lot of folks out there, but I haven't, I definitely never heard anything from her that it was completed, and I haven't heard any information from anyone as of yet if they've, you know, got some of her work or what have you to see if they can publish it now that she's transitioned.
That would be great,
thank
though.
Thank you so much. It would be. I was hoping that something of that, because the more I heard about it, the more excited I got, but... Yeah, I hope that is the case. My second question was, since you have a lot of her recorded work on your site, do you know of any talks that she had where she might have discussed the dangers that white women play in the system of white supremacy?
You know, specifically, you know what, I know she's talked about it. Where I could pinpoint it in a video, I'm not sure. Matter of fact, and it was a video I listened to not too long ago. Wow. I'm not sure. Now, one thing I could suggest, because I don't have a limited number of videos on my site, is to do a search on Dr. Welsing, and sometimes titles will come up that will, you know, I'll let you know, like, you know, this is something that she may have talked about. Like, she probably has, you know, some kind of video that has to do with sex or interracial, and I'm pretty sure she does, because I think I saw one, but off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I'd say do a search on YouTube, and then maybe you can look among the videos, and you'll see something where she talks about sex.
Okay, and I have a final question, and that is, I wanted you to speak on subtlety and paying attention to those things. The reason why is because on an episode of with Dr. Welsing on The Cows, She discussed with Gus taking our eyes off of the small screens of like cell phones and tablets in order for us to have a broader worldview. And it made me think of something Dr. Ben said years ago, in line with what you talked about earlier in the show in regards to black women's hair and the message that it sends. Well, Dr. Ben said, essentially, if you're going to get involved in the fight against racism and white supremacy, everything about you needs to be African. And he said your hair needs to be an African hairstyle, no perms. Your clothing should be African. Your language should be respectful. And if you can, learn an African language. So he said basically everything about you should be striving to become more and more African if you're in the struggle. And I think a lot of us don't understand how powerful that subtle message of what your hair looks like when you're in public sends to people, or the clothes that you choose to wear, or the things you choose to speak about. So I wanted you to speak on subtlety and just paying attention to those subtle things. And like Dr. Wilson said, taking your eyes off the small screen to see the entire forest and not just the tree that's in front of your face. Thank you, and I'll mute my line there.
Okay, thank you. As far as the small space, I think that there are certain things that the technology is being used as a programming tool as well, getting people to be focused on that small screen, focused on trivia, focused on self, increased narcissism, increased self gratification, and self focus. And I think that's all by design. I think the technology is being used to literally program people into total numbness and quite frank foolishness and brainlessness. And if you watch people with these cell phones, they're hypnotized by them. They're fixated on them. And if you look at what the cell phones are being used for, it's mostly trivial things. So, yeah, I would say definitely the whole world can flash by you while you're engaged in the entertainment avenue. And that's what cell phones really are. It's just a form of entertainment. They're more a form of entertainment than communication, real communication. So, yeah, I would definitely say that black people especially need to take our eyes up and look around, because what's happening to us in the United States, it's not isolated to the United States. This is a global system, and this is a global problem. And so what is happening to us is being mirrored everywhere, and what's happening everywhere is being mirrored right here in the U.S. So we really do need to develop a global mindset and see this as a system. It's not an American system. It's not a democratic system. It's not a Republican system. It's a white supremacy global system. And I think once you look at the global picture, then you start to put some things together and say, you know what? I can't fix this by assimilation. I can't fix this by looking more white, marrying white, sleeping white, talking white, or whatever that means. I can't fix a global system like this by succumbing to it and assimilating to it. And as far as Dr. Ben saying everything should be African, I think that if we are serious about getting out psychologically of a system of oppression, then it would make sense to redesign our identity. Now, does that mean you change your name? Does that mean you change your hair? I say you change the inside of your head. I don't think the outside should be the focus, the main focus. I think it can accompany the inside. But I've seen people with African this and that and this and that, and inside it's all tore up. You know, I see a lot of people with dreadlocks who walk in hand-in-hand with a white person. So I'm not convinced that the outside will lead to the inside. I think the inside has to lead to the outside. And I would say I'm not going to be a dictator. You know, I'm not a counter-racist police. I'm not going to tell people what to wear or what names. But I do think embracing our heritage, whatever that is a powerful thing to do. And just detaching our heritage, detaching our identity from this system is a powerful thing to do. So how people should go about doing that, I really couldn't say. I'm not really one to say that I understand who a person is by the way they wear their hair or the way they dress. I can't really say that. But there are some ways you dress and wear your hair that do make loud statements about where your head is at. But I personally believe we need to focus on the inside of the head, and hopefully other things will follow suit. You know, inside the head, behavior changes, speech changes, values change. And as those values change, it would hopefully lead to more of a Africanized or appearance and way of life and clothing, you know, that reflects a much more healthier identity. But that's you know, I don't really know how we would accomplish that, you know, as far as getting people to live in an American system and change their dress in large numbers. I don't know. But it's something to think about. You know, you raised some interesting points.
Thank you for taking my questions. I appreciate it.
Okay, I hope I answered them.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
The person dialed in, I'm not sure if you're on the vote line or not. Victim, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us.
Yes, I do. Good evening to everyone. Good evening, Pam. Thanks for coming on the show or the program. I would like to ask you, since you become less confused and, you know, you became an author and did your works, I want to ask you, how many people have you kind of referred to, you know, your work, the work of maybe Dr. Francis Cresswell Singh, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., or maybe even this program as well? Like, how many people would you say that maybe you socialize with or that you've come in contact with, have you introduced to these these things, and what was the, you know, the response that you got after you maybe introduced them to any of those things?
You know, the number I couldn't say, but I will tell you this, on a personal one-on-one, face-to-face level, hasn't been very high. I find that a lot of the people that I come into contact with at work, family, are, I would say overall, not really open. You know, very, very much assimilated. We're all white identified. I have a lot of people in my family who are very white identified. So those conversations don't take place very often. As far as the people that I know personally, I think I have better success with the people that I don't have relationships with. People that are strangers. People that have called me on the phone, you know, because they sent me an email and wanted to talk. People that I've corresponded with by email. One person in particular that I do feel good about, you know, I'm not going to take credit for it, is a guy that I was in a class with. You know, we both work for the same company, and we were in a class together. And he struck me as very white identified. And he and I used to talk, you know, go back and forth emails for a couple of years. And, you know, we would talk, and then his email started changing. And he started sounding, you know, much more aware, and he started fussing about things that I never thought he would have fussed about. And one of the things he said, and I'll never forget it, was he was sick of seeing all these white women on TV. That's something he said to that effect. And basically he was just saying that he was sick of them always being portrayed as beautiful and this and that and stuff. And I was like, this guy who used to basically date nothing but white women, you know. So I could see the real change in him. And then he wound up marrying a black woman. And I never thought this guy, based on what little bit I knew about him, I could have been wrong, but I never thought he would, you know, he just struck me as very white identified. He went on this vacation with a bunch of white people. And so I thought that this guy would be the last person, but he did. And he would just, you know, so I think personally I've had more success with people that I don't have personal relationships with. Because I think when you have personal relationships with people and you start to change from who they knew you to be, you're going to get resistance. You're going to get resistance, and the harder you push, the harder they're going to push back. I think people who have a preconceived notion about who you are very difficult to reach sometimes when you change. Sometimes they become resentful. Sometimes they become, undermining. You know, they become contrary. You know, they start to oppose you. So I would say personal contacts. No real big history on that. Nothing, no history to be bragging about. But I do talk to certain people that I know, and I know that they have started paying more attention two things than they used to. And they call me up and they'll say, you know, remember when you said X, Y, Z and this and that? And, you know, I'm starting to see that. So, but I would say on a personal level, it's just numbers small. But hopefully, I've reached people that I will never know that I've reached. So I can't give a number. All I can say is I'm in this universe for a reason. I became aware and acquainted with the works of these different people for a reason. I'm doing what I'm doing for a reason. I think I'm supposed to do it. I don't know how well I'm doing it, but I know I'm supposed to do it because it feels right and it feels natural. So I feel like as long as God, and I do believe in God, I believe as long as God wants me to do whatever it is I'm doing, then I'm going to keep doing it. And, you know, the last thing I'm going to say is I think, even though it's very frustrating, this is true. I tell people this is not, you know, calling yourself trying to change, you know, trying to oppose the system or at least educate yourself, it's going to be, it's a full-time thing. You know, it's not, it can be a very frustrating and very demoralizing and very isolating thing. But I would tell you this, if you've done or said something to help one or two people, then you did something. You did what you were supposed to do. You know, you reached the people you're supposed to reach. And that's the way I look at it is, if I've reached one or two people, then that one or two people might reach three or four people. So that's the best way I can answer it. I really don't have a number, you know. But okay. All you can do is hope. Time, yeah. You hope that it's made some impact on somebody. Yeah.
Okay, if I may, I had two more, and I'll try to make them quick as possible. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking myself, and I just wondered what your response would be. I think, like, most non-white, especially black people, have some sort of mental illness or, mm-hmm. I don't know, mm-hmm. quote-unquote personality disorder and some type of addiction, and that's mm-hmm. another reason. I mean, and of course, it's due to racism, white supremacy,
mm-hmm.
and that includes myself, of course. What do you think about that? What do you think?
Well, I totally agree, 1,000%. I think it would be impossible to be in a system like this and have spent a minimum of 500 years. I don't even know how long we've been under system white supremacy, but I know in this country it's been a minimum. I mean, this whole system was designed to break us down. This whole system was designed to make us mentally ill. Because what is a better manifestation of that than loving your oppressors? So, yes, we are people, like Dr. Wells used to say, poor mental health. You know, and but the one thing I keep in mind is the people that create the system are in worse psychological condition than we are. But that's neither here nor there because they are still the ones to have power over us. But, yes, I think healing is the first. I think accepting the fact that you're mentally ill is the first step to curing it. It's to healing yourself. And I think the biggest problem that I see is the denial part. If all black people could stand up and say, I am mentally ill, because of the system of white supremacy, that would be a big step forward. There's no shame in that. It's like saying that you've been mistreated and it is due to a system. So I agree with you. I think that we are a mentally ill population, and it's because of racism, white supremacy. And I think the biggest thing that we can do is start to admit that we have a problem. Because you can't fix something if you don't know what the problem is. If you don't even admit you have a problem, how do you fix it? And if you don't recognize what the problem is, how do you know how to treat it? So, and I totally agree with you. And I include myself in that number as well.
Okay, and lastly, you kind of got into the answer to this already, but what would you say to people that are you know, on the road to being less confused and want to, you know, contribute and do more, you know, counter-racist work? What would you say, what type of advice would you give to people that are kind of on the verge of trying to do something and, I guess, explore whatever talent or gift that they might have and mm-hmm. do some type of counter-racist work? And that'll be my final question. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. You know, in my first book, I think in all the books, I put in something. Let me see if I can find it. Let me see. I got a book here.
In the back, I had a back of, I think, of all the books, but I know definitely the first book, Counter Warfare Solutions and Suggestions. And so I made like a whole list of things. I think it was 13 strategies. And these were things that people could do. And I'll just mention a couple of them. One is called the theory of non-participation. You know, not participating in those things that demean us. A lot of it has to do with, I supported the entertainment industry, the music we listen to, the movies that we pay for, the where we put our money, the people that we support, black entertainers and white ones. A lot of this is if we took those, okay, like even fashions, non-participation, buying fashions and stuff from white companies that don't even want our business. They don't even want our black bodies associated with the brands. There's so many. Most of the things I mentioned are things that cost no money. They're things that actually save money. And so there's a lot of things we shouldn't be participating in my opinion. Some of these things I got from Mr. Fuller, like stop showing off, bragging, and talking too much. Sex and relationships. Stop having sex with strangers and people you're not committed to. Stop having unprotected sex and having children outside of, you know. Stop making babies if you're not in a committed relationship with a committed partner. And this is not a dig at anybody that has children under those situations now, but don't make any new ones. Stop choosing role models for your children because they're rich. We have this celebrity worship thing going where if a black person is successful and makes a lot of money, they can do no wrong. You know, we'll defend these people and we'll identify with these people right in front of our children. Stop demanding respect from other people. You don't have a social contract with everyone you meet. The only person who is obligated to respect you is you. Another thing we could do is take control of the education of our children. It's the best of your ability. Turn off the television. Give them a book to read. You know, get them out from front of these iPads and electronic devices because, quite frankly, it's doing brain damage. And I read somewhere recently that a lot of this iPad usage is actually causing brain damage. You know, become a leader of one, you know. Just, you know, think for yourself. Study the system of racism. You know, once you start changing your behavior, people will notice, and people will be influenced by that. You know, once you start having more self-respecting behavior, there'll be people that oppose you, but there'll be people who are watching you. So I don't want to tell you to buy the book, you know. You don't have to do that, but I would just say that you could make a list of the things that you see as problems, you know, and then see how you're participating in those problems. You know, if you're around other men, you could stand up as a man and say, you know, I'm not going to disrespect other black people. I'm not going to disrespect other black females. You know, I'm going to stand for something. If you're a black woman, you cannot fuss and fight and feud with other black women. I would say the biggest thing you can do is take control of yourself and retrain yourself. And then the way that you treat other people will have an effect on down the line. The way you perform in front of your children and the role model you set for your children will have an effect on down the line. Look at Dr. Welsing. What kind of family could she have possibly grown up in to produce a person like herself? We can create legacies like that. We can create generations like that. So to me, I don't say to people, you got to go do some great big thing that requires a huge sacrifice or push yourself at physical harm or starting some huge organization. What you can do is work with yourself and work with the people around you and treat people around you better than you have been treating them because we all do things and say things that we shouldn't be doing and saying. And if you start doing that, you'll have plenty of work on your hands just working with yourself. So I would say to anybody, start with yourself. And if you really want a copy of that, what is that? Counter-racism warfare, if you shoot me an email, I'll send you a copy of it. You know, I'm not trying to get anybody to buy a book. You know, I would like you to read Trojan Horse because I think it's my favorite book, honestly. But, you know, this is not about, I'm not here so you go and buy a book. So if you want a copy of that particular set, you know, that chapter, I'll send it to you. Just shoot me an email because I think it has some helpful suggestions.
Again, thank you. And
okay, you're welcome.
I will shoot you the email. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Right on. I think we knocked down all of the callers. We were doing 2 hours. RacismWS.com, the website again, RacismWS.com. You'll see links where you can get the different books that we've already mentioned, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, and the rest of the content all should be linked right there. You can also, if you just want to go to Amazon, you can see the hard book. Ebook versions will be right there. You can put in Trojan Horse, and it'll pop up. You should be able to get the content. If you get confused, you have any questions, racismws@gmail.com. Her email address, shoot her a message, and she'll be able to get back to you. You can drop me a message, too, if you get confused. You can't find it. You need help trying to get some of the content, or if you want to check out some of the blog posts as well, but it should be linked in the description. Anything that you want to say before we wrap things up, Pam?
I just, the only thing I would say is the great words of Dr. Welsing, and that is that we have to stop being afraid and we have to start doing something. And let me see if I can find that again. I don't want to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read this, and I think this is really important. You know what? One of the people did ask about, did Dr. Welsing talk about sex, interracial sex? I think that's what, or sex with white people. And she did say this, because it's I'm not sure where it's an excerpt from, but she said this: as a collective, black males must realize they have been fooled in believing white females are their loving allies. While white females are luring black men into bed and to the altar, the white female collective is depriving black men of the opportunity to fully function as breadwinners and not just sex machines. That's just something she said on page 249. So I just wanted to say that she does talk about sex between black and white people. And I'm pretty sure she covered black women with white, you know, having sex with white men as well. But that's just the one quote that I found. This other thing is, I would just end on this note. This is something Dr. Welsing said. She said, if you know you want to know, you know, just leave this program with something to think about. Number one, stop name-calling one another. Two, stop cursing at one another. Three, stop squabbling with one another. Four, stop gossiping about one another. And I really got to look at number four for myself. Five, stop snitching on one another. Six, stop being discourteous and disrespectful toward one another. Seven, stop robbing one another. Eight, stop stealing from one another. Nine, stop fighting one another. 10, stop killing one another. 11, stop using and selling drugs to one another. 12, stop throwing trash and dirt on the street and in places where black people work, live, and learn. So, you know, there's a whole lot of work that needs to be done, and most of it starts with ourselves. So I would just say, you're much more powerful than you think you are, and your power is a spiritual power. That's why they attack us, because black people are spiritual. And if black people start changing that energy, that negative anti-black energy, into positive, black-affirming, life-affirming energy, spiritual energy, something on this planet is going to change. And you have to think about it. Why would they work so hard to keep us from understanding or even respecting ourselves if that respect wasn't powerful? So I tell people, keep in mind, the very things that they try to stop us from doing are the very things we should be doing. There's something very powerful in the black mind, in the black human being, in the black mindset. There's some very powerful spiritual energy there. And so you harness your own self. If you start to take control of yourself or at least work on yourself, you're going to be putting some positive, powerful energy out in the universe. And I'll just end on that note.
RacismWS.com, the blog site again. Always a pleasure to have Pam on the program. I'm sure we'll look forward to having her back on the program sometime soon to get updated on what's going on in Chicago, new projects, and more suggestions on what we can do to solve the problem, white supremacy racism. Thank you so much. I know folks really appreciated you taking some time out of your busy schedule to just give us some reflections and thoughts on just the super important work of Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. We will be in touch with you soon. Stay warm, stay safe, okay. And definitely thanks again for sharing some time with us, Pam.
Well, thank you for having me.
For sure, for sure.
And I will try to stay warm.
Right on, right on.
With you with 40-degree weather, I will try to stay warm.
It was 50 today, 50.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Let's see, there you go.
Right.
So thank
on.
You very much, and good evening to everyone.
For sure. You have a great evening as well, and we will speak soon.
All Okay, thank you.
Stay safe.
Good night.
Context of white supremacy. Always a treat to have Pam on the program, and she always looks out for us too. If you read that post, the tribute that she wrote to Dr. Welsing, she has links in it as well for many of Dr. Welsing's visits to the context of white supremacy. Appreciate that as well. But always a pleasure to have her on the program, and hopefully we'll be able to have her back on the broadcast soon. We'll take a quick moment. I said I was going to give information about the white guest that we'll have on tomorrow. I will do that. But I do want to take a quick moment just to say, even as Pam was exiting, it is super important. I think we had a listener who dialed in this past weekend, and I heard this from some other people as well. Dr. Welsing being on the program 31 times. We've had Mr. Fuller on more than 20 times. Many of the guests that we've had on have been, you know, multiple-time guests on the broadcast. It's very important to just not take things for granted, particularly in a system of white supremacy, to just say, well, you know, I'll get to Dr. Welsing next time, you know, she'll be on for a 30-second time, I'll call then, or, you know, Pam, she'll be back, you know, a couple weeks or so, I'll call then, because you just don't know. In a system of racism, white supremacy, I think for years on this broadcast, when we got ready to wrap up, or if I was talking about a future program, I would say racists, white people permitting, just to make sure that that is out there, that, hey, whites have canceled this program before and thrown us off the air in the middle of broadcast that time. But we have been thrown off the air repeatedly. And it's just the sort of thing that you just, under these conditions, you just can't take it for granted that you'll have an opportunity to ask that question, or to make a comment, or to reach out and talk to that person, even if it's something constructive. I think that was one of the things that, you know, really stuck out to me. There were many other things, but when we were studying the Little Rock Nine, the quote-unquote school integration that happened in Arkansas in 1957, Melba Petilla Beals, Warriors Don't Cry, that's the name of her book, Black Female. She was one of the Little Rock Nine, these black first nine black students that attended this all-white high school in Bill Clinton's Arkansas. But she said that it was Minnie Jean Trinkney, was another black female, was part of the Little Rock Nine, where she had dumped a bowl of chili on a white student's, on a racist student's head, and they ended up expelling her because she did this. And this was total retaliation, in my view, black self-respect, because they had been terrorizing them. I think this happened in, like, December of 1957. They had been terrorizing all nine of them for months. But Minnie Jean Trinkney and Melba Petilla Beals, they were kind of close. They were friends. And they had spent some time together before Minnie Jean was about to leave and go to New York to finish her schooling there. And I think Melba Petilla Beals, in her autobiography, she wrote that she wished that she had kind of told her how sad she was that she was leaving, and she had been so helpful being there, and just having her to confide in and to talk to, like it just her presence allowed her to draw strength to persevere and to endure the hell that they had to go through with all of these racist children that they were around, you know, 8 hours a day, and racist parents and racists coming that, you know, weren't even residents in Little Rock to terrorize them. But just, you know, the trauma of all of it, that, you know, she just couldn't reach out to say that. And I just think it's really important because you just don't know when you'll have that opportunity. All of us are under constant danger in the system of white supremacy. So anything could happen under these conditions. So really take that opportunity. I think it's been, over the years, I heard so many people say that they were nervous about dialing into the program, period, and or particularly nervous about dialing to speak to Dr. Welsing or Mr. Fuller or any, you know, any of the number of other people that have come to hang out to talk to us. It's important to not let that stop you from asking, from seeking information, asking questions. We hope, you know, we can kind of erode that, if anything, that we take from Dr. Welsing's transition, people who said that they missed out on the opportunity to ask her directly questions, to get information about things that they had questions or curiosity about, to not let that happen again with other folks. Anybody, if you want to ask them particularly something related to racism, white supremacy, or just anything that is constructive information, ask. Speak up, ask, be courageous, get your question asked or your comment or whatever the case may be. Be courageous and don't let that stop you. Also, I wanted to make sure I got in as well. There was an article that I just thought was really powerful. Black female. She was writing about her experience with Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. I don't know if I was going to read the whole thing. It's a little long. I'll read about half of it. I'll read the last portion of it. It kind of gets to the point, but it's at theroot.com, and it's titled Dr. Francis Cress Welsing Saved My Life, just published a few weeks ago. And she talks about how Dr. Welsing worked with her and gave her personal one-on-one therapy when she was having a really difficult time and going through depression. And again, none of us qualify for mental health. Victims of racism, black people, we do not qualify for mental health. And Dr. Welsing just worked with her in terms of processing how white supremacy had impacted her throughout her life, not just the acute problems she was experiencing at that moment, but just even things going back, you know, 10, 15 years back to her childhood, where just experiences with racism had impacted the person that she was, understanding that so that she could face truth. I think we talked about that a lot today. And grow stronger facing that truth and just overcoming those obstacles. But and the author, her name is Lalita Cannon. Lalita Cannon. Hope I'm saying that correctly. But she writes, on January 4th, I phoned my uncle, Mo, who had introduced me to Dr. Welsing through her writing, more specifically her book, The ISIS Papers. He knew why I was calling the minute he picked up, and we grieved in solidarity. When I finally felt lucid enough to call her answering service to inquire about a memorial service or funeral details, I had a breakdown over the phone, asking questions and providing my contact information between sobs. Yesterday, I exited my car, situated myself to the east, said her name aloud, and poured out some water for her. The past few days have been difficult, and I may have several more ahead, but one thing's for certain, the legacy of this regal gift from God is undeniable. The indelible imprint she has left on my life and on the lives of others is incomparable. It was undoubtedly one of her goals to help black people, and she succeeded. I remember sitting patiently, sometimes anxiously, in her waiting room while she completed a session with another individual being guided through life's peaks and valleys by her wisdom. She was and remains a warrior and a conqueror for black people. She's simply passed over to the ancestral realm. I love you, Dr. Welsing. I will carry with me what you taught me. I will honor you. You will never be forgotten. Ashe. Again, this is at the root. You can read the whole article. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing saved my life. More to come. Today will not be the last day that we have commentary on Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. I'm sure we'll have other folks coming through to share some of their reflections, thoughts on her teachings, and how they'll be moving forward and using some of the myriad of tools, concepts, and just really valuable lessons Dr. Welsing left us to help us solve this problem and try to strengthen our black self-respect, which is a major part of how we go about producing an answer to this problem. Quick commercial break, and as I said, I will give some information about the guest for the program tomorrow. Kind of a peculiar situation. We'll explain that, and then if anybody has a quick detail they want to add before we wrap things up, we should have time for that as well. Context of white supremacy. We'll take a quick commercial, and we'll be right back.
RacismDaily.com, your number one source for global news reports on race, racism, and overt actions of white supremacy. From Asia to the Americas to Europe to Australia to Africa, racism is not a thing of the past. It is our current reality. Be informed. Be globally informed. You should be the first to know. RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? The behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Do you need a one-stop shop for all of your multimedia needs? Triumphant Multimedia is a skilled team of professionals with a passion for great marketing and chic design. Our specialties include consulting, brand development, copywriting, and creative graphic design. That's second to none. We also offer photography, photo retouching, videography, and video editing. At Triumphant Multimedia, our goal is to provide highly effective creative solutions built to suit any individual need or budget. Give us a call at 678-732-8067 or check us out online at trimultimedia.com.
Context of white supremacy. Quickly, before we get to the broadcast tomorrow, a listener submitted a counter-racist review of the new Star Wars flick. I have not seen it. I have read the review, but I have not seen the film. Great material. I think a lot of folks did see the film. I hope you did not go to the movies to see the film. I shared this with another victim, and they said that some of her black family members went to see Star Wars like 5, 6, 7 times in the movie theaters. It's like, wow, like making sure that racist entertainment is there to consistently provide us the best in anti-black cinema. Anywho, the film review, great writing. It's on the blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. It's top post, so you'll see it at the... it's at the very beginning of the page, but you can check that out. One of the folks that did leave a comment, they, in my view, it was just filled with a lot of anti-black material, a lot of anti-black sentiments, not focused on white people being the ones who are most to blame and the reason why black people are behaving the way that we do. And they attributed a term to Mr. Fuller, calling black people eight ballers, and saying that that is in Mr. Fuller's code book. That is completely inaccurate. The term that is in Mr. Fuller's code book is eight balling, not eight ballers. And that is a pattern that I have observed over the years where people will take concepts from Mr. Fuller and totally deform and mutate them to something different, where they can name call black people. And that's happened with the term showcasing as well, where it got changed to showcase blacks. Mr. Fuller never used the term showcase blacks, and the same is true for eight ballers. He never said that. That is not in the code book. And both of those terms, if you read what he actually has written in the code book, both of those terms are about focusing on the fact that in a system of white supremacy, racists can manipulate non-white people, victims of racism, to do things to harm other non-white people. But it's underlined, I mean, literally, it's in bold-faced type that the masters of the situation are white. They are the ones who are most to blame for what is happening. But somehow, again, that's the importance of black self-respect. Somehow it ends up being shifted from that to just going to find another way where we can blame and name call and get at another black person victim of racism. The comment has been deleted because you're just not going to come on my page and spew a lot of anti-black material. You can do that on your own page. You can create your own site and do that. And it was incorrect. I mean, there was two reasons. One would have been enough, but there were two things that were problems. with the post, as I said, attributing incorrect information to Mr. Fuller and the anti-blackness of it all. But the correct term is eight-balling, and it, again, it focuses on white people being the problem and how they manipulate victims of racism. But that should not detract from the great counter-racist review of Star Wars. Check it out on the blog. Great material. Share if you think it's relevant. That might even be something. I know a lot of people have seen Star Wars, so that might even be something where you can get people to start to re-examine the way that they watch films and the way that they think about racism, white supremacy. Broadcast for tomorrow. We will have a white, since someone just asked about white women, we should have a white woman on the program tomorrow. Again, I can go back to Dr. Welsing, the importance of checking the news, reading the newspaper. I think I said one of the programs this past weekend, I think I checked like the Washington Post and the New York Times. I think I check a lot of other national newspapers and news sites a lot more frequently than I check the local news. I do check the Seattle Times pretty regularly, but I just don't check it as often. Like, I check New York Times pretty regularly, like multiple times a day even sometimes. I don't do that with Seattle Times, and that's stuff that's happening right here, literally right on my street sometimes. So I checked Seattle Times in December, and they had a post. It's titled, I Felt Sick About It, Seattle Woman Confronts Family's History of Slave Ownership. This is from December 27th of 2015. I don't know if I will read the whole thing. It's a little lengthy, but basically it's a this white female. Her name is Dorothy Bullitt. She is a senior lecturer and distinguished practitioner in the Evans School of Public Policy and Governance at the University of Washington, Seattle. And so she goes into detail talking about how her family owned slaves, her ancestors owned slaves, and how watching the film 12 Years a Slave impacted her. I think her ancestors, they were in Kentucky, how her great-grandfather, he fought for the Confederacy, and how it's important to talk about all of this and how this has impacted black people, how this has impacted white people down through the years. She has other sites where she talks about the importance, the need to have a conversation about race. So I reached out. I was like, hey, let's see if we can get her on the program. I was thinking, you know, a lot of white people, they, you know, do not want to come on this broadcast and get asked serious questions with suspicion that they are practicing racism. I reached out to her. It took quite a few emails. I even had to send her an audio clip. I think Jim Grimsley was the portion that I sent. He's an admitted racist, where he was talking about his book about going to school in North Carolina when schools were integrated. I sent her a clip where he was talking about how they processed slavery in North Carolina and just either didn't think about it or was minimized, certainly not thinking about this as terrorism and torture of black people that just continued and continued for centuries. Anyway, I sent it to her, and she said, hey, I'm willing to do it. Let's do it Thursday, tomorrow, January 28th. She said we can do it on the program. However, she said when we were initially talking, she said, so this is like a live broadcast? And I said, yes, it is. And she said, so you take, you know, people call in to ask questions? I said, yes, that's true. And she says, wow, I don't think I'm willing to do like live questions. I don't think I can handle that if folks are just going to call in and ask questions and kind of put me on the spot about things. So I said, okay, we can do the program and no questions. And she said, okay, I'd be willing to do that if they're not going to be any questions. This was before I had sent her a clip where she had actually heard any of the program. And this, I think, has only happened one other time with admitted racist Jane Elliott, who is, in my view, at the height of the tacky list, where she didn't want to take any questions, kind of the same thing. You know, putting me on the spot and talking crazy, and I'll just hang up and leave, that sort of thing, where she reneged the last time she was supposed to be on the program. She reneged because I wrote in the description that I just didn't agree. She was, same thing, she was Jane Elliott, pushing this idea that white people are ignorant about racism, and she's like, oh, I'm not even going to come on your program, even though I agree to it. I'm not even going to come since you said that you don't agree and you don't think white people are ignorant, and hung up the phone. At any rate, she should be here tomorrow. If anything, for me, it just means that I am looking forward to ramping up and just making sure that I can cover as many questions as possible in the time that she's going to be with us. I will post this article that was written by a black male, importance of black journalists, Jerry Large, who writes a lot about racism at Seattle Times, victim of racism. He has quite a few posts just talking about racism, generally local stuff. Sometimes he will certainly he wrote about what was happening in Ferguson and some other issues, but a lot of times he'll be writing about racism and things that are happening right here in Washington State. But at any rate, I'll post it on Facebook. I'll tweet it so that folks have an opportunity to check out the article. If you have any questions that you would like to ask, if you email them to me, untiljustice@gmail.com, I will ask them, untiljustice@gmail.com. So, again, I'll post it on Facebook, the article. If you do any research, again, her name is Dorothy Bullitt, and it's B-U-L-L-I-T-T, Dorothy Bullitt. And she's a professor at the I know this is a common name. She's a professor at the University of Washington. But if you do any research, if you check online, she has some other pieces where she's talking about racism. She has a LinkedIn page where she also is talking about racism there. So if you do any research, you read this article, or just questions that you think it's always good to ask a white person, drop me an email. Email would be preferable. That way I'll be able to see it, that I can keep it organized, and I will ask. If we go live time, like if you're listening to the program and there's a question that you want to ask, you should do it, you know, quickly. Just drop me an email and I'll try and make sure that I have my email page up in front of me so I can catch it and I can ask. And then, you know, we'll definitely have time when she leaves for folks to kind of process what she said. But I thought it would be better to see if we can get her on the program, even if we're not able to take questions from callers, as opposed to not having her on the program. I think it's always good to study whites. I think Dr. Welsing would encourage that for sure. But that should be tomorrow, normal program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. She felt sick about it, that even that right there is something that would generally make me laugh, her feeling sick about her ancestors being terrorists to black people. But I'm looking forward to that, and as I said, I'll try and nab everybody that sends a question, and I'll see if I can nab it, and I'll just pitch it as though it's my question. So, you know, we'll just do it that way. But looking forward to that on tomorrow. Thing else I wanted to make sure that I got in before I check if anybody had a quick call that they wanted to get in, or question or comment that they wanted to get in. I'll check the line. If folks that dialed in, if you all had any questions or comments that you wanted to make sure you get in before you wrap up, and then I have a moment to process, make sure I didn't leave out anything that I wanted to share. Anybody have any comments they wanted to make sure they got in? Folks are all satisfied? All the folks who dialed in with a hand up, everybody satisfied? That's cool in the game, too. I can get prep time. Everybody satisfied?
Oh, I had a quick question. Did you hear about the Nat Turner movie that's supposed to be coming out, or that they're supposed to be making? I think they said that Searchlight Films just got the rights to make it. I don't know if you heard about that recently.
I certainly did. It was at Sundance. I was a little bummed because I wanted to be at Sundance this year. That was one of my things. I talked about it last year at the beginning of the year, because Sundance, they normally will have at least one or two, sometimes a lot more than that, but they'll at least have one or two films at the Sundance Film Festival that are dealing directly with racism. Last year was, 10 minutes or 3 minutes? The film about Jordan Davis, the documentary about Jordan Davis. I'll probably botch the title at this point, but that was there last year, and I think they had some other. The documentary on the Black Panther Party, Stanley Nelson's film, that was there last year. I think they had some other films last year that were about racism, white supremacy, but I did post it about it. I think it was Fox. I think it's Fox Searchlight. I think that's the film company. They, I think, paid $17.5 million for the film. I did have a moment of pause because I have seen sometimes where racists will purchase the rights to a film and then not, like, show it. Like, that has happened before, where they will purchase the rights to a project and then it just never gets released. But I did see that Nate Parker, the black male, I think people might have seen him in The Great Debaters. He's had quite a few other projects as well. In fact, if folks were listening closely, H. Khalif Khalifa, he was on the program towards the end of last year in November. He said that Mr. Parker came to the Nat Turner Trail, where he is in Virginia. But he came to Virginia, and he came to his site and wanted to get more information, inspiration for his project. Mr. Khalifa talked about that just a few months back. And so then when I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, he was talking about that. But, yes, I did see it. And even I can get one in from my BFF, Amy Goodman. Now, she goes to Sundance every year. She was there last year. She talked to the white guy who did this documentary on Jordan Davis. She talked to Stanley Nelson and Angela Davis. They were both there. She talked to them a long segment about the Black Panther Party and their film and everything that was happening at the time from last year in Ferguson and all that. She was talking about different films about autism on the program this week. Not that that's not important. That's, you know, a serious issue. No problem there. But they spent time talking about Oscar So White. I didn't hear them mention this film at all. And from what I've been seeing, this was like one of the films that generated a big buzz at Sundance this year. I didn't hear them say anything. Now, maybe I missed it. I don't, you know, see every single second of Democracy Now, and they have bonus coverage sometimes. So maybe it got buried in all that. But I didn't see anything about this film. I didn't hear anything about this film from Amy Goodman. I'll make a correction if, you know, I'm in error if somebody did see that. But yes, I did see it. Super important. I'm looking forward to the project. Gabrielle Union, I think, is associated with this, which is awesome. She is super fine as well. But yeah, I did hear about that. I think it's great. I hope it eventually does come out.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Just about the film briefly, I saw a clip on, I think it was, I don't know, Today's Show. I don't know. The one with, I think, Billy Bush. I don't, one of these morning shows. And they were talking about, they had Mr. Parker and the racist suspect co-star of the movie. And they were talking about it, and, you know, I thought, why did they call it Birth of a Nation? I wonder if he got any feedback, negative feedback, if he wanted to call it the Nat Turner story. You know, and I just, and the news person asked him about the title, and he explained how he wanted to give that old movie a new spin. I mean, the old racist movie. And they showed the advertisement for the movie at the time. They flashed on the screen this Klans person on a horse and Birth of a Nation. And I'm waiting for them to say anything about Nat Turner. And it was well into the interview, and Nat Turner's name was mentioned one time in everything that they had to say. And it was a pretty long interview, but the movie Birth of a Nation was spoken about, the old one. He spoke about, you know, of course, you know, he was answering some questions about, you know, post-racial America and all this other crazy crap. But Nat Turner's name was mentioned one time, and not even by Mr. Parker. It was mentioned by that Bush boy, that news guy. So that's all I wanted to say. But the first thing that ran through my head was that I wonder if they gave him any pushback if he would have called it the Nat Turner story. That's all I had. I'll mute my line.
I am sure I'm just a film like this all the way around. I'm sure there was all kinds of pushback, and he didn't go through Hollywood to get the financing for the film, how it's going to be marketed. I'm sure there's going to be a lot about how they handle a subject like this, much less what the finished product ends up looking like by the time, if they do any edits or anything like that. Before they act, if it gets released. Now, I hope it will, got a nice buzz and all that stuff, so hopefully it will get released, they'll do the correct thing. But I would not be surprised once racists get their paws on this type of work. I would not expect them to do the correct thing. I would expect William Styron, if folks know, he's not even suspected in my book, but he's a white author who wrote a biography on Nat Turner in the 1960s, and he was supposed to have talked with James Baldwin about doing this project. I think he was, Mr. Styron, I think he was engaged in anti-sexual behavior. Double check on that, but something that is not accurate and a distortion of history is generally the type of thing that they do with characters like Nat Turner. So, yeah, I would have lots of suspicion about what they do with this project, even though I'm super happy that it came out. And, you know, he wanted to do this work, doing serious work, outstanding, and going outside of Hollywood. I think that was something people had been saying about us doing our own projects, doing independent work. Outstanding. Looking forward to seeing it, but definitely suspicious about what whites are going to do with this project. And how they market it, as you said, who, if they're going to focus on the white actors that are in the film or on the title, or somehow it ends up being a flashback to Birth of a Nation, that sort of thing. Be very interested to see how they deal. And even to contrast this with Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained, which was, you know, such a big box office smash and white people loved. And we had racists come on the program and talked about how much they loved it. It'd be very interesting to see the contrast between this project and that tripe from a few years ago. Anything else, or folks satisfied? Anything else folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap things up?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Not that this is really important, but I was just curious. Gus, did Karen Fleshman get back to you? I got a feeling that she was really trying to get more ways to, you know, practice racism and, you know, try to refine her racism. That's all I had.
She did, and I didn't even respond. She emailed me pretty promptly after she was on the program last week. This was a white woman. She wrote a letter in the Huffington Post to black people about how she felt bad and guilty about, you know, all the terrorism that whites dump on us. And she clearly is not ignorant. She kept insisting that as well, that white people are ignorant. That's part of her job. She goes out to train whites and what have you, and gets compensated well for doing this. She did write me, and I didn't even respond. And I think my only codified response would be pretty much what I had said on the program, that I'm not in the business of helping racists refine how they practice white supremacy against us. So I don't have any tips, and I am not convinced that she is working against racism at all. So I don't have any tips. I don't have any consultation to offer. You know, she wants to make an investment in some of the independent black academies that I'm aware of. I can do that and get them their information so she can cut them a check if it's any other black projects that she wants to economically support. But beyond that, no tips here. Folks satisfied? Anything else folks wanted to make sure they get in before we conclude?
Yes, if I may.
Oh, yes, sir. We can hear you.
Oh, okay. Well, this is not, should be on the top of the list of concern or anything, because it's actually is dealing with the people activity, entertainment, sports. I think most of us would know that the most watched sporting event, the Super Bowl, will take place not this weekend, but weekend after next. But what takes place during all of the week and a half or 10 days is they focus on personalities. And out of that, probably one of the most recorded and or audiovisual personalities will be victim of racism, white supremacy, the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. And I suspect it's going to be some interesting commentary that's going to take place during that week and a half, 2 weeks. Already he was quoted as saying that because he's building a contrast between himself and white male Peyton Manning, that there's some focus on him basically because he's a quote-unquote black male playing quarterback. But it should be some other interesting tidbits that take place during the week. Unfortunately, I could be wrong, and help me if somebody else saw this. I saw him posing with a white female, what appeared to be a white female, in one of those Hollywood-like things where the stars walk and they pose and take photographs. And I saw him Cam Newton I'm talking about. I saw him posing with a what appeared to be a white female that had her hair dyed, and the colors of the team. So that kind of like ugh, you know, to that. Nevertheless, I'm pretty sure he would be quoted a lot during these 10 days, and I kind of like would be paying so much attention to it from a standpoint of racist concern during the week and a half, 2 weeks prior to the game.
I definitely. I think that'll be something to see how that plays out. I'd already seen some comment that basically people were kind of saying that Cam Newton is this uppity Negro, basically was the type of language that was being used, that he's arrogant and he does all his celebrations and gyrating and all this. In fact, I think they posted that someone in Seattle here had started a petition to have him banned from coming to, I mean, just lunacy. But yeah, I can totally see how that's gonna play out over the next, I guess, 10 days or whatever it is until the game next weekend. The contrast between he and Peyton Manning. The only thing I can say that reading is more important than watching television or racist entertainment, that would be one. And two, even though I would think with the Panthers, unless I'm misinformed, I think they only lost one game this season, that they should be, you know, huge favorites to beat the stuffing out of Denver, much like I think what happened a few years ago when it was the Seahawks and Denver, where it was kind of a blowout in the Super Bowl, much like the same thing. The only caution, and I mean, if you were in Vegas, right, the smart money, you should be betting Carolina heavy. The only caution I would give in the system of white supremacy, just that contrast, I feel like I've seen enough in the news over the past 3 days where Peyton White Jesus Manning, where they're talking like this is his last season and they want to see him ride off into the sunset mm-hmm. and get another Super Bowl victory, that it would not stun me at all the way that racists script things if somehow they end up winning so that the white guy can beat this uppity, arrogant black quarterback. It would not surprise me at all if that's the way things end up playing out. That's just the system that we are in. Plus, I think if Carolina does win, that would be two out of the last 3 years that a black quarterback wins the Super Bowl, which is kind of like, wow, like that would, I mean, that would just have been unheard of for decades in the NFL. So I could see a lot of reasons that for anything strange or bizarre happens and the underdog Denver Broncos end up winning and, you know, they get to get their fun and cheer and salute. Yes, no good uppity Negro didn't get to celebrate and get his Super Bowl after all.
Yeah, that's I would say that's how a lot of white people would like for that outcome to take place on his behalf, meaning Mr. Newton's behalf. He has been voted at one time the best college football player and also won a national title. So he's been quite successful, especially this year. And as you mentioned, and there's a strong possibility that he can finish that out as being, you know, being not only being the quarterback on a winning Super Bowl championship, which actually is the best football team in the world as far as this type of football anyway, also the MVP of the game. And of the, there are a lot of people talking about him being the MVP of the NFL itself, which is he would be the first when it comes to it as a black male that gets it by himself. Steve McNair was a co-MVP when he won the MVP back years ago. But, I can see it both ways, like what you're saying. I can see it both ways. Of course, I would like for it to be in his favor, you know, from the standpoint where he can get some more coins, you know, that sort of thing. And hopefully, if he has a safe ending to his career, that he can safely transition into something that would keep him financially as secure as possible under the system of racism, white supremacy, that would be allowed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That has been, even I can include Dr. Welsing in that. If you go back through the archives, in addition to many so-called holidays where she was a guest on the program repeatedly, she was a guest on Thanksgiving repeatedly, she was a guest on quote-unquote Christmas, we also had her as a guest repeatedly for the Super Bowl. I think she was here last year on the day on the day of the Super Bowl, and previous, matter of fact,
I used to love it.
She was here when Peyton Manning, the only time he did win a Super Bowl, she was here that day as well. Or actually, it was not when he won, it was when they lost to New Orleans, 2000, I guess,
right.
That would be the 2010 Super Bowl. She was here for that one as well. So, yeah, I was thinking it might be cool to pick one of the times that she was here for a Super Bowl to rebroadcast that one for next Sunday, I guess it is.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good, yeah.
If I may, I think that either way it goes, let's say I can definitely see, you know, Denver winning and them exalting, you know, Peyton Manning as, you know, the greatest person that ever lived. And also, even if the Panthers were to win and, you know, Cam Newton has a good game, you know, that's just something that'll pacify the, you know, the niggers. You know, hey, you guys, your athletic prowess, of course, is good, but, hey, we're still winning in the end, you know, with all that money being made. For the networks and the NFL in general and the owners, hey, either way, we're going to win. So that's all I have.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing to keep in mind. Black, whatever is accomplished out there that does not in any way, shape, or form negate the system of white supremacy. I think I have said before, this is as it relates to the NBA, but I have said basically the thing that happens at the end of all of this, regardless of what team wins, a white man will give a trophy to another white man. Regardless of how many black players are responsible for that victory, one white man will give it to another white man. That's what's going to happen next Sunday, regardless of who wins. That's what happens every time under the system of white supremacy.
That is true.
Everybody satisfied? Anything else quickly they wanted to, anyone wanted to get in before we wrap things up? Right on. As I said, I'll post that article from the Seattle Times so you can check out Dorothy Bullitt, the guest for tomorrow's program. I'll post it so if you all have any questions, anything that you want to make sure that we ask the guest, we'll be ready to roll. Just drop me an email and I will get your question in. If you get them to me before the program, that'll be great because then I can just have them listed out and do all that. But if you're just listening live time and you hear something that's a question you want to ask because we can't do questions tomorrow, email them. I'll get it to you. I mean, I guess you could do Twitter and all that other stuff, but I can't really guarantee that I'll keep that monitored as well. It's kind of a bit much to check out a bunch of different sites like Facebook and Twitter and everything else. So email would be best. If you can email if you have a question, untiljustice@gmail.com, I will be sure to get them in before she departs tomorrow. But it's normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be looking forward. Always grand to have white folks on the program. Dr. Welsing would for sure approve. With that, always grand to hear from Pam. Her website again, racismws.com. Racismws.com. Thanks to all the folks who listened in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Wednesday evening. If you have any questions, if something didn't make sense, if you got confused, you can't find something in the archives, you're trying to get one of Pam's books and you are having some difficulties, just drop me an email and I'll do my best to help you out. If you dropped an email before and you didn't get a response or what have you, just send me another one. We get a lot of emails and what have you, but I definitely want to make sure we respond. So do not be bashful. Drop another email. Gus, get on it. I need certain information and let me know. And sometimes emails do get sent to my spam. That has happened before as well, where it doesn't, you know, come through. So always good to drop another response if you do not hear back. With that, we're fundraising for 2016. Invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. listener-supported counter-racist radio. When you get to the blog, you can check for the new Star Wars counter-racist review, and then the PayPal button, top right corner. If you're not in the PayPal, drop me an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. With that, thanks everyone for tuning in. I'm going to see if I can get some reading done this evening as well. I started reading a different book that is fascinating. It's a nice compliment to The Half Has Never Been Told. It's also about the torture, enslavement of black people in this area of the world. And one of the things that jumped out immediately, we've been talking about alcohol quite a bit in The Half Has Never Been Told. Same thing popped up in this book where they talked about how whites would deliberately get black people intoxicated to make them easier to control, particularly when they were going to try to move a large group of black people who were going to be sold from Virginia to Louisiana or Mississippi, someplace south. Here, have a little rum. Have quite a bit of rum. In fact, that way you won't be thinking clearly, might not make the best decisions. It'll be much easier to move you niggers from this spot to that spot without me having to worry every 5 minutes if you're trying to run away or kill me or both. We'll have a much easier time dominating and terrorizing you. I thought that was fascinating. And I said, if black people had that information from a very early age, that this has been a means of black people manipulating and controlling black people for centuries. This has been a part of their plan. I think we might have a very different relationship about alcohol. Just maybe. At any rate, sobriety would be best under conditions of war. I definitely discourage being around intoxicated whites. It is an environment that is rife with danger. It can go from zero to lethal in a matter of seconds. I don't even think it's a smart idea to be around intoxicated non-white people. It's just too much evidence that people don't make the best choices in that sort of condition. And we as black people already have way too many problems to have unnecessary difficulties in our lives. If you're going to be a driver, passenger, pedestrian, you do not want to be intoxicated. They just had a report in the New York Times today, Florida, no less. A retired firefighter talking about how it is like staggeringly disproportionate. Not that I was surprised, but just further confirmation that there was a staggering differential between the number of black people that are ticketed for not having a seatbelt as opposed to white people. And they went through all the information, all the data and everything, and just like, this is white terrorism. This is standard operating procedure. This is not unconscious bias. This is what the system is supposed to produce, where whites, Darren Wilson's, the Daniel Hose Clause, they are looking for you. If you are a black person, you're behind the wheel, you got melanin, that's already an infraction. That's the way that we should be thinking. You do not want to compound that by being under the influence or whatever so that they can stop you and bam, now they can really go to town. You want to be lucid, clear thinking so that we can make the best possible choices to keep ourselves safe and anybody else that you might be responsible for. With that, and Buck, that, I think someone also, I've said quite a bit, buckle up every time you get behind the vehicle. We want to do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. I think I've said that quite a few times on the program, but that was in the New York Times, at least online. It was online today. I suspect it'll be in the paper hard copy version tomorrow. That said, we'll be back about 24 hours. White guest, get your questions. Be prepared. Creator, please help us. Be patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. Please help us to be patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. Remind us, it is an act of black mental health to refrain from name-calling and squabbling with other black people. Help us manifest our appreciation and respect for Dr. Francis Cress Welsing in the way we treat other black people, including ourselves. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.